Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, read us where we're able. We'll routine to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hee hee! King Shazir the Turbo! All rise for King Shazir the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. saying wrong. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look.
A treasure buried deep beneath a stone, and the valley people swore they'd have it for their very own. Go ahead and hate your neighbor, go ahead and cheat a friend, do it in the name of heaven, justify it in the end. Won't be any trumpets blowing come the judgment day, on the bloody morning after, one tin soldier rides away. So the people of the valley sent a message up the hill, asking for the buried treasure, tons of gold for which they'd kill. Came an answer from the kingdom, with our brothers we will share all the secrets of our mountain, all the riches buried there. Now the valley cry with anger, mount your horses, draw your sword, and they killed the mountain people, so they won their just reward. Now they stood beside the treasure on the mountain, dark and red, turned the stone and built the movement. Peace on earth was all it said. Go ahead and hate your neighbor, go ahead and cheat a friend, do it in the name of heaven, you can justify it in the end. Won't be any trumpets blowing come the judgment day, on the bloody morning after, one tin soldier rides away. Go ahead and hate your neighbor, go ahead and cheat a friend, do it in the name of heaven, you can then justify it in the end. Won't be any trumpets blowing come the judgment day, on the bloody morning after,
trouble all my day. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. No pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble, I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. Never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps he'll die upon this train.
Sleeping in my grave
while he
it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We've been doing this show for quite some time. Now we're looking at today's show being Knights 154. So that's quite a bit of shows that we've actually spent time out here talking to everybody and around the world, and had some really brilliant individuals on this show every, well, not every show, but most of the shows out there throughout the entire history of the Knights of the Round Table. I remember way back when the very first Knights of the Round Table came up, and I wasn't exactly sure how it would actually go over, but it actually went over pretty well. People kind of fell in love with it, and we had a lot of good people, Ireland and Scotland and all over the world, and Australia, that come on, and we talked about all kinds of things going on in the world and what we could do to fix them and stuff. And here we are in the year 2015, and you know, there's still pretty much the same problems going on up there, and there's a lot happening. It's just so much if you actually look into the alternative media and see what the headlines and the deal are, then you know, it's everything from doomsday to exciting news and alternative energy to government corruption, and it just goes on and on. And so, you know, I sit here and I think about this whole deal all the time, and I ask myself, you know, why even bother? Am I even doing anything worthy of, you know, spending my time out here every Sunday trying to speak common sense out to the world? And I always come back to the same exact conclusion, you know? Something's better than nothing. You know, if the entire world is all bad, you know, if there ain't nobody out there saying some sort of message of hope, then, you know, it's all bad. Just about every doomsday movie that I've ever watched on TV, it's just amazing to sit back and watch how humans react in certain situations and how they treat one another. You know, when they think that the end is near or whatever, they'll run around and do things they normally wouldn't do because, you know, tomorrow's not going to be there. There's absolutely no consequence. One of the things that always kind of strikes me every time I see them doing this kind of stuff is the fact that what if the doomsday didn't come and they done went around and did all the dirty deeds that they were doing, and then they had to basically deal with it, you know, after the fact, looking around at society. How bad would society be? Would they have burnt down all their buildings and killed off all their neighbors and did all that kind of stuff? You know, Raymond's been asking me to play this song for quite some time, this 110 Soldier, and I remember the song back from when I was a kid, and it's got a pretty powerful message to it, and it's, you know, it's essentially talking about, you know, go ahead and hate your neighbor and go ahead and cheat a friend and so on and so forth. You just have to listen to the lyrics. I always listen to all the lyrics of the songs because they tell a story. And so most of the music you're going to hear on the Knights of the Round Table, even though I played a lot of it over and over, it's kind of a personal story, you know, that I see that there's a powerful message in. So we've been doing this Knights of the Round Table for quite some time now. And I think that we've touched a lot of people out there in this world. We've actually grown our network, and we've actually brought some really good stuff to the table. You know, there's not a lot that us as individuals can do to kind of steer this world away from what's going on, the chaos in there. Everybody's putting their war machines in different areas and bucking up to each other and saber rattling and all that kind of stuff. And the governments being corrupt the way they are. You know, it's kind of all going to come to a head at some point. You know? At some point, it's going to pretty much explode or implode on itself, because you can't just keep running society this way. You know, when you see headlines like you know, thousands of I had the headline right in front of me. A whole bunch of antelope just dying, just killing over dying. Fish dropping off by the barrel full, and you know, birds falling out of the sky, and sea lions and whales beaching themselves, all that kind of stuff. All of them have biblical reference to me from what I've read inside that book there, but you know, there's a lot of folks out there that despise that book so bad that it's not funny, you know, and they they reject it. They reject anything that has to do with God or, you know, any kind of higher power out there. And it's understandable because there's been a lot of dirty deeds done by people under the guise of, you know, so-called religions or belief systems or whatever. But the fact remains, you know, none of us really know what's out there. We're just kind of speculating on information that was passed on to us from other, you know, generations. And to me, that book works for me, and so I'm going to hold on to that for a while if that's all right with everybody. And, you know, I don't try to shove it down anybody's throat, but I'm just trying to point out that there was some specifics in there that were said that, you know, just seemed to happen. You know, whether there were previous societies before us or not, you know, I don't know. Is there aliens on the moon? Was there a society on Mars at one time? I don't know. I've never been there. If I could step foot out there and do some investigation for myself, I'd come back with the truth and I'd tell you whether there is or isn't. No, it's just a total wasteland, or yeah, I found some pyramids on Mars. But until we get past the point that we actually pay attention to what we're doing here on this planet, you know, some people look at Earth as a living entity, and that we're literally killing off the Earth. And some folks look at it slightly different than that. But you can't deny, when you see things going on in our world, that they're, you know, of the destructive nature, such as the chemtrail. You know, people say that's a conspiracy. Some people say it's not a conspiracy. They are contrails or not contrails, you know. I know from my view that whenever I seen this all the time while I was growing up, we used to have really beautiful clear skies. They didn't have all this stuff up there. They didn't have these messed up clouds with checkered patterns. And recently I started noticing burn marks on my leaves, and so I did a little bit of investigation. There are literally chemical burns on all my trees around here in this area, and it's 100 miles away from me. The trees at my father-in-law's house are pretty much the same thing. Entire trees just literally falling over as if you know, they just said to heck with it and just keeled over. And it's not just that. There's so many different things out there, so many different wars and rumors of wars and plagues and famine and pestilence, you know, everything which that book said in Revelations is pretty much coming around. And so, you know, was there some sort of remote viewer way back in the day that actually seen all this stuff and wrote it down in a book as a warning sign to humanity or what? I don't know. All I can tell you is this. You know, if our fish are dying off and our bees are dying off and the mainstream media is not talking about it, it either is real or it isn't real. But if it is real, then we got to get our act together, because we can't keep going the way that we're going. It's all going to fall apart. And it's not some sort of fear porn to point out the obvious. Whenever you see things happening in your own general vicinity, and if you actually take the time to walk down and walk through your local streams and see what all kinds of stuff is down in there, old tires and junk cars and refrigerators and you name it, I've seen it all down in the streams here in the United States, where people don't care, you know, don't care enough to clean up after themselves. They just throw it down in the river because, you know, hey, nature will take care of it. I dove in my favorite swimming pool when I was a kid and ran right into an old washing machine that somebody dumped off in the middle of the night, you know. Could have killed me, but it didn't. I got lucky, but either way, you know, it used to be my favorite fishing hole, but now it's no longer safe to jump in because who knows what's in there. And if you take in trash up everything that you got as far as your environment, and you know, you're basically stealing from your children and your children's children, because, you know, unless somebody actually takes the time to go around and clean up the mess that mankind has created, it's just going to continue to get worse. Why am I even saying all this? What's the purpose? You know, what's the point? Because for the most part, I'm preaching to the choir, to those who believe, and I'm just alienate those who don't. The deal is, you know, we started the Knights of the Round Table for a reason, and that was because we seen a genuine need out there in society that we needed to fix things before it got worse than it already is. It's already broken. But I'm a believer that if humanity can actually take the time to come together, we can repair this mess. Now, before it gets to the extent to where you see all the doomsday scenarios, the ozone stripped off or whatever, you know, I've seen it all. You know, I believe Mother Nature's resilient, but I believe at this point in time, nature has to work overtime just to keep up with the doggone mess. People putting drills down in the ground and forcing chemicals and water down there and cracking up the ground and wondering why they got earthquakes, pumping out hydraulics out from underneath land masses and wondering why they got sinkholes and, you know, filling up the dumps with just tons and tons and tons of garbage instead of trying to figure out a way to recycle it on a mass scale. And to me, and the most folks I talk to and associate with, it's all common sense. We should have figured this stuff out so long ago. We should have known better than to allow our society to fall down in the disrepair that it is actually in as we speak. But I don't believe that it's all beyond hope. I believe that, you know, unfortunately, it's going to take a catastrophic event in order to get people to come to the table and work things out. But by that time, is it too late? Is it too late to turn this ship around? We've got Russia over there with war machines in different areas. We got China with war machines in different areas. Britain and United States with war machines all over the place. And, you know, we're talking of a potential World War III event, which, for all those individuals out there that think that they're going to climb up in a bunker and they're going to be just fine during World War III, I got news for you. You're not. You're absolutely not going to be fine. You're going to be worse off in that bunker than you would have been had you just let the blue flash get you. Because when you're talking about the type of energy that would be released during multiple nuclear fission, whatever you want to call it, during an atomic war, you're talking about power that will loosen up every single fault line in existence. You're talking about the power potential to literally create a mechanical pole shift on this Earth that would literally cause the Earth's crust to rotate from one side to the next. You know, this is all science. This isn't some sort of, you know, hyped up fear monger deal. We're floating on a crust of Earth that is all fractured, that has fault lines all over the world. We have volcanoes that some inactive and some active, that during that kind of pressure release would send ripples clear across the globe. I mean, it's like taking and shaking up an egg, you know. You crack the egg and you sit there and, you know, push on it here and there, you're going to see that things will seep out the other side of the egg. That's what it is. And so, common sense would dictate you'd want to steer society the furthest away from that kind of scenario as you could. You'd want to try to tell your leaders of the free world and not so free world or whatever, you know, hey, before you guys get kind of stupid over here and start shooting each other, number one, we don't want to send our kids over there to shoot your kids. And they're not listening to the average Joe. The situation going on behind the scenes of the ones pulling the strings, the power elite, the Illuminati, or the Freemasons, however you want, whichever dark society out there that you think is responsible for all this. In reality, it's each and every one of us that's responsible for all of this. Because we've become passive, we've become to the extent to where we will allow things to be done to us, as long as it's not a terrible deal. They can do it in increments, a little bit at a time, you know, and you know, give you a poison shot in one arm, and heck, you know, why worry about it? I'm going to make it for another 10 years anyway. You know, there's medicines out there. There's alternative energies out there. There's all kinds of solutions to every single problem under the sun. The fact remains that, you know, I say this all the time. You can't sell no bullets if there ain't nobody shooting at each other. You can't sell no drugs if there isn't anybody sick. And so there's a lot of money to be made behind the scenes by doing the whole Jerry Springer deal, you know. Get this guy aggravated, get that guy aggravated. When they fight, you film it and you show it to the public, who just seems to love a bunch of craziness going on. But our life, all of our lives, they're all intertwined. We're all on the same rock, flying through the same time and space together. And when this boat sinks, it's all hands on ship. We're all going down, including the captain. Don't matter who's in charge. You think these military individuals out there who have spent trillions of dollars to build bunkers to be able to survive a coming nuclear war, you think they got it all figured out, but you're wrong. They don't. If we actually have the misfortune of going to a thermonuclear war such as World War III, there will not be one single survivor on this planet at all. It doesn't matter how deep they are in the ground or how far they are up in space. Mankind just hasn't got it all figured out yet. And so for those folks out there that believe that it's a survivable event, I hate to tell you, it's not. Each and every one of us out there under that circumstances will see our last sunrise together or our last sunset together. That's including the presidents and all the different commanders out there that believe that they got it all figured out. We'll keep continuity of government and we'll survive this and we'll come out on the other side and we'll still be America or we'll still be Russia or whatever. No, you won't. There's a Metallica song out there that talks about King Nothing. You know, if you destroy it all and you're king, what are you king of? You're king of a wasteland where you can't even grow enough food to survive on. You know, in California, they talk about eating bugs. Literally, they're talking about nutrition of bugs. A guy named Grindall, he puts videos out every once in a while, talks about the Agenda 21, where they're talking about making bugs slurry, you know, for eating bugs. Unfortunately, it may come down to eating bugs, because if the antelope are dying off like they are, I think it was 600 to 6,000. I can't even remember the number anymore. There's just so much going on out there. And so, what I want to point out to everybody is these Knights of the Round Table, they weren't for nothing. They weren't a waste of time as far as I'm concerned. They were a plea to all of humanity to come together to bring the brilliant minds that we have access to the table. I've talked to some really wonderful people from all nations, and we've had some really good conversations, some really good ideas. We've had our ups and downs. We've had our laughters. We've had our tears. We've had it all. And that's what families do. And if we can bring these families to the table before the house burns down, then we can save it. And we can save one another. There ain't no reason for us to go around fighting over oil when there's an alternative. There's no reason for us to be fighting over water when there's an alternative. There's no reason for us to be fighting over food when there's an alternative. But if you kill off the farmer's land, there ain't no food. There ain't no wildlife. If you kill off our oceans and our rivers and our streams, you're essentially putting a gun to your head. And you're putting a gun to your child's head. Because a person can only go like 3 days without water and 7 days without food. And if it comes down to a whole, cannibalistic style world, who would want to live in a world where you're seeing your neighbor eating your other neighbor? You know, I get really riled up and emotional sometimes because I think that we got to figure out a way to solve this. And if you're not a believer in a higher power such as God, then you should be more concerned than me. I would think that the atheist would be so much more concerned than the believer, because the believer at least believes that after life after death that they're going to have a chance to either eternity in heaven or eternity in hell, vice versa. So the atheist has more to lose than the Christian. You know, if when you die and you just go straight to the dirt and that's it and it's all blackness and that's all there is to it, then all the time that you have here on the earth is so precious. Every single second, every click of that clock there, every tick is so precious because you do not get it back. And being the average lifespan is anywhere from 60 to 80 years here in the world because of all the different chemistry that we're floating around in, and the pollution and the toxicity of the medicines and everything out there, then you should be enjoying your life to its fullest. And you should be trying to figure out a way that if you got children, that you leave a better world for the children than you had to deal with yourself. So, you know, I don't know any better way to say it than that. I'm not trying to offend somebody just because they maybe not believe the way that I believe, but I got to point out the fact that life is precious. And each and every individual out there, each and every one of you are so important to the grand scheme of things that you can't even possibly imagine. You know, if you think about, you know, you kill somebody off who may have had the next cure for cancer or whatever, There's a way step back for all of humanity. Now, there's individuals out there that don't want cancer cured. There's individuals out there that don't want the common cold cured. Because there's money in it. You can't sell medicine if there isn't nobody sick. The way that we treat our veterans, the way that we treat our elderly, the way that we treat one another, and in some cases, the way that we treat our children is just, to me, mind-boggling. It's heart-wrenching. And there's absolutely no common sense in all that's going on. The distractions that everybody's under, you know, it's as if the world has become so incredibly dysfunctional that they don't even know how to fix things anymore. And so all the people out there who are still, you know, seeking common sense and truth and honesty and justice will start shouting out on radio shows like Wake Radio and People to People Radio and Tina Soar and Shaziz Radio and all the different networks affiliated. They'll start shouting it out. They'll point it out to their friends. They'll say, look what's going on over here in the drug industry. Look what's going on over here at the government. And then suddenly, in comes the labelers where they're all a bunch of conspiracy nutcases. But folks, it ceases to be a conspiracy theory when birds start dropping from the sky. It ceases to be a conspiracy theory when trees are dying off, when birds and bees and fish, when the water becomes so acidic that you can't go out and stand in the rain without your eyes burning. You see a film build up on your car after every rain because something is in that water. And for all the environmentalists out there that, you know, run around protesting and doing what they're doing, you're focusing your energy in the wrong direction. You're telling it to someone who doesn't care. The elites, the corporations of the world, they don't care. They don't care whether they destroy the waterways in Mexico or Korea or Vietnam or China. They don't care. As long as they're on their tower up there with their caviar and their fancy wands and have power to tell everybody what to do and what not to do, they don't care. They don't lose sleep at night when thousands of people die. 6,000 people in the last couple years in Ukraine have died. 6,000 people. That's a lot of people. And that's just one area of the world. We haven't even factored in Syria. We haven't even factored in Iraq or Palestine or Israel or China or the United States. You know, we haven't factored in all the numbers. We haven't factored in the abortion numbers. We haven't factored in the medical malpractice numbers. We haven't factored in the police shooting numbers. We haven't factored in not even a fraction of all the numbers of all the souls that have been lost in the last couple years.
To this.
Yeah.
In the last 2 years, 360 people in the United States have died in hospitals because of medications that were given. In other words, mistakes. Hospitals and doctors have killed 360,000 people just in the United States in the last 2 years.
Well, doesn't that to you sound... doesn't that ring an alarm bell? Doesn't that to anybody beside me ring a bell of what's going on? You know? How many people... Okay, the Georgia Guidestones. I've brought those up once in a while. Somebody actually took the time to build these pretty good-sized monuments and put on there that we should reduce the Earth's population to 500 million people. All right, well, 500 million people in a world where we're coming up on 8 or 9 billion people, that means a lot of people got to go. You know?
I don't know why they would want to reduce the population for that to that number, because right now there are unused areas of the earth that could grow food for 10 times the population today. Of all the fresh water in the entire world, we only use 2% of it. That's it. Everything else runs to the ocean.
But what we do use, we pollute.
Exactly. That's the point. You know, man thinks he is so fantastic that when birds start falling out of the sky and deer start dropping dead and fish start washing up on shore, man is so arrogant to think that he is responsible for this stuff that happens. He is not. Sometimes Mother Nature just throws a whirlwind in there, and man needs to find out, is it something we did, or is this something in nature?
Well,
and if it's what we did, we need to correct it. If it's something in nature, then let's figure out why it's doing it. I mean, it could be a good thing, but there again, maybe it's not. So we find out if it is correctable, then don't correct it until you find out what you're doing first. You know, every action has an opposite and equal reaction.
Well, regardless of whether nature did it, regardless of whether man has done it, there's obviously some things that are occurring in this world that need to be addressed, that needs to be watched. You know, Thomas Jefferson, I keep saying this, he had the quote that the price to freedom is eternal vigilance. And it doesn't just apply to freedom, it applies to life. You know, if you ain't paying attention, you walk out in the street and get run over by a Mack truck, and that don't feel good. So, you know, why do it? Pay attention when you're walking, pay attention when you're doing things, and, you know, it's all common sense, but apparently we've lost track of common sense. Now, we know that putting thousands of gallons of a chemical called Corexit into the ocean wasn't a good idea, but they said, oh, well, it's all right. We got this, you know. But they put it in there, all right? Now, whatever your point of view is on the radiation leaked at Fukushima, you know, hey, to each his own view. It's either we got to watch it, we got to study it, we got to figure out we got to address it all, man. I mean, look what happened way over there in Russia. Which one was it? Chernobyl. All right, and then Three Mile Island, all the different radioactive deals in there had put some sort of factor into the environment, all right, and on a pretty large scale. And with the oil leaks out there in the Gulf Coast and the different oil leaks up like near Alaska and stuff, and all the different, you know, all this, you go out there, you throw the crud in the environment, and then nature has to come behind you and try to clean it up to some extent. Actually, to the majority of the extent, nature is powerful enough to clean up anything that man does. But there has to come some time. It's like a teeter-totter, you know. There has to become some time whenever you've gone too far, or you're doing it at such a rate that it's going to take years to clean it up. See, there's the key right there. It's not that nature can't clean it up, because nature can clean up any mess that we make. It's going to take years to clean that up. So for years, you're not going to be able to swim in your favorite water hole because it is so toxic that it'll kill you if you swim in it. You see what I'm talking about? It's like the goldfish in the bowl, Raymond.
I know. You're talking correct. It's man's arrogance.
I mean, if we could get control of all this kind of deal, then we'd have it made. You know, I mean, we got the technology to literally work in harmony, perfect harmony with nature. The science proves it, you know. And we don't even have to defy the laws of physics, so we don't even have to get the knuckleheads out there that always argue with the alternative energy guys. We don't even have to get them riled up. All we got to do is just do it, you know. I've seen so many different comments just here recently alone where they talk about, well, free energy is not possible because you can't defy the laws of physics. And I'm sitting here telling them, look, I ain't trying to defy the laws of physics. I'm trying to work within that realm to use everything that we already know as efficient as possible so that we could, at the very least, extend the battery on the electric car. Extend the life of your power pack that you're going to be running your house off. Use it in a way that nature, when nature's got this raging river beside your building, that you're using that energy force as it's rolling down the river to charge your house up. You got the sun coming out, and if the hole in the ozone layer is as big as they say it is, then all that extra sunlight's going to help you with your sun power anyway. So, hey, what's the problem? All right? I don't believe about the hole in the ozone layer, because somewhere on this entire globe, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, there are massive lightning bolts occurring. Anytime you got voltage that high, you create ozone. When you create ozone, you have an ozone layer. You understand what I'm saying? You pour oil on top of water and you poke your finger in it, that oil will separate. You leave it alone long enough and it will come back together. If you stop popping rockets through the atmosphere, then you'll stop poking a hole in the ozone layer.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
it's common sense. But to get people to the table to talk common sense, especially the ones that have spent years in college and got educated by liberal teachers out there that teach them all kinds of craziness, you know. Look, if global warming was true, then 20 years ago, whenever we turned the pilot light on to start boiling the water of the earth, then by now you should have some serious problems. And I mean serious problems, way beyond what we've got now. It only takes a 13-degree temperature difference to cause catastrophic weather throughout the entire globe. That's it. 13 degrees hotter and your jet stream moves. 13 degrees hotter and the Gulf Stream moves. And what happens when those weather patterns move? It causes bad weather. You know, you got hot mixing with cold, tornado when you want them, cyclone, hurricane. Any of these ring a bell?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know,
you were saying about man, and I said man's arrogance, thinking that he is so powerful. Duh, Mount St. Helens, when it blew in Washington State, United States, released 300 times more energy than both atomic bombs dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki 300 times. In fact, it was estimated that it was 3,000 times more energy released by all the bombs, hand grenades, and bullets during that, the entire Second World War.
But Raymond, you can't add that in. You can't put that factor into the equation because it goes against the agenda, and the climate change equation doesn't function properly anymore. So you're putting information in there that you're not allowed to put into this information. That's hearsay, according to the ones that believe in global warming.
The fact is, that's just it. Global warming is happening. And it has happened five or six other times during the past couple thousand years, during man's time on Earth. Global warming has happened five or six times. It's a natural occurrence. And man is not the one causing it. I mean, all of the carbon footprint of every man in the United States that paid attention and tried to his carbon footprint, everything we saved in the past 10 years, one volcano eradicates that in 1 week.
Instead of arguing about it with all the climate change believers or deniers or whatever, instead of arguing about all this kind of stuff, let's just go with the worst case scenario. Let's just say that it's happening. Okay, I'm gonna agree with you. Now let's build our alternative energy generator that will solve that problem.
No, what we need yes. Yes, we definitely need to do what you said, but we also need to accept the fact that it is happening, and with global warming or freezing, whichever way it wants to go, we need to prepare for it with energy, but at the same time, with planting of crops, the way we live, how our daily lives. I mean, you know, so we have a little ice age, big freeze. Like they had back in, what, 1600s? I mean, France and other countries, people were starving to death. They were eating rats. They were doing everything to survive because they did not prepare for it. They planted the same crops. Well, a 7-degree difference, an average temperature of 7 degrees drop in temperature, the crops you normally grow and sustain life with will not grow in that weather condition. And then people would grow wheat, and it wouldn't work. And the wheat was falling over and rotting. And they would get hungry. However, people in London, England, they were having a blast. I mean, they were throwing parties out on the River Thames. I mean, it was frozen over. No one had ever seen that happen before. People were having carnivals and circuses, and they were just throwing parties by the thousands every day. They enjoyed it. What was going on here? They weren't prepared. They didn't know it, but at that time, they were prepared unknowingly. So what, now that we have all this education, all this science, finally accept the fact that it is global warming, what's going to happen, the weather is going to change, prepare for it. Change the crops you're growing. Change your clothing accordingly.
Going back to the basics of the common sense, we should have been doing that years ago. We should have prepared and built our homes to withstand weather, the most extreme temperatures in either direction. And it's not something that can't be done. I mean, we have the capability right now to build an aerodynamic house that if a tornado come blowing by at 300 miles an hour, it just wrap around it and go on down the road.
You are exactly right.
We got the technology to build houses that would literally float. I mean, they do it down by the river all the time. They got their house on stilts, so when the river rises, the house rises, the garage rises, the car rises, and if the water don't go back down before it's time to go to work, they get in a boat and they go over to high ground to where their four-wheel drive is setting, and they drive on to work.
Exactly. Build your house that will accept and work with nature under any condition, no matter how rough, no matter how severe. It can be done. It's just that simple. I personally have deliberately bought my house where it is because I am 12 feet above the road in front of me. And the road in front of me is like 25 or 20 8 feet above flood level. I don't need a floating house.
All right, so it looks like we've been joined by a couple of individuals. Muddy, how you doing there, brother?
Well, I'm doing all right so far. I'm awake.
So, who else we got in here?
Stewie, man. He's over there in Australia. I've met him. He's pretty smart fella. Pretty good-spirited and all that. And I conned him into coming on here. He says, it's too scary. I said, oh, no, don't worry. Shaziz will talk.
Well, I like to shut up every once in a while and get people to talk.
Yeah, like, what do you think? When we're like, what?
You got, see, that's the thing. You got to stay awake in class so that you know what's going on. I think there was an episode where I heard somebody snoring in the background.
Yes,
there was an episode where I did that.
Hey, Scott, he deliberately asked certain people, well, what do you think about that? Just to see if they're paying attention.
Yeah. Class, wake up!
Yeah, I think he cuts his hair like that and teases it out to get the attention.
Yeah.
It works.
I'm telling you what, if you don't have jacked up hair, you're not a mad scientist. I'm sorry, you know, it's just the way it is.
I just want to look where my diploma is.
I told you, you got to just go print it out. It's that simple. Heck, you can forge a few if you want.
We're going to go to the plan and print it out.
All right, we'll have to send him a link to that, doggone it.
I'm going to fret that sucker.
We need to get Stoney in here, too. Maybe, you know, Barry Prince in here. And,
Whoever we bring on the board here, just make sure that everybody kind of keeps the hold down on the, obscenity talk there.
We can't do it.
We're live on radio. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table on ShazizRadio.com, Awake Radio, People to People, Tinosaur Network, and many, many, many more.
And Curtain Climbers listening.
All right, so anyway, we've been kind of like talking about common sense. We know there's a lot of stuff going on in this world. There's a lot of things that need to be addressed, and it's going to be like, you know, on a grassroots thing. You're just going to have to individually start working with your neighbors, your city council members, and not going out there with some sort of, you know, save the trees thing, pick it in paper factory or something like that with a wooden sign and a paper deal that says save the trees, you know. Go out there and plant a tree. That's common sense. You know, if you plant a tree, there's one growing while they're chopping the other one down. It's as easy as that.
Well, that's about the only way they keep them going, but they cut them down so young anyway.
Well, you know that there are lumber companies out there that do replant, and it's the reason why they replant is because it's blatantly obvious that they want to have a product in the future as opposed to not having a product at all.
Right.
So,
I don't see how they can sell more wood if they don't plant more wood. But they spray all that stuff that you were talking about. And with the aluminum, barium, and beryllium and all that stuff, it goes up in the roots and clogs the leaves. Just like a weed eater, if you clog up the muffler, the carburetor ain't going to work right, Ike. So, I mean, I don't see, you know, none of the stuff they do really makes much sense. But, you know, genetically modified food, 5% nutrition. Oh, yeah, you're going to get bigger fruit. Closer internodial lengths and all that kind of good stuff, you know.
But if
you can stuff your belly and starve to death, you know, what good is that? They made money. That's right.
Will your children be born?
The trees.
Will your children be born with four or three eyes or something like that after eating all this kind of crazy stuff for years? You know? I'm just asking because who knows? I've seen all the doggone mad science movies out there, you know. Frank, you remember there was a really terrible show way back in the old days. Do you guys remember Attack of the Killer Tomatoes?
Yeah, I do.
All right, so what happens? You genetically modify a tomato and that wants to eat your face off. Where was the common sense and all that? I'm just asking.
I'd rather have one of those in a Venus flytrap.
You guys are getting crazy now.
Well, we got to bring some sort of humor to the table because it's just so overwhelming. You know, there's so much going on out there, and that if you don't kind of try to, you know, soften the blow, so to speak. You understand what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah. All right. Them gals over there in Three Mile Island with extra noses and stuff.
Yeah. Well, all I'm saying is this. We got all the stuff that's supposedly happening out there in the world. We got wars, rumors of wars, plagues, famine, pestilence, all the different corruption going on. And so, you know, hey, we can either, A, stand idly by and not do nothing at all, or we can, B, get out there and start cleaning up our own environments and working with our own representatives in our own districts and start working our way from the bottom to the top, because it's blatantly obvious, according to the track record that they've left behind, and you can't trust the mainstream media, you can't trust the doggone government, because they say one thing and out one side of their neck, and then they say something totally opposite out the other side of their neck, and neither one of what they said is what they do. They always do something that's going to put money into their pocket. It's just that.
Yeah, it's called misdirection.
Yeah.
And then the way they put the whammy on you when you're not looking. Kind of like the electric companies. They're selling you, you're paying for twice the electricity. Most of it's going through the ground to you. Which brings out another view. If you've got a bunch of earth batteries or stubble field batteries, like what used to power the telegraphs, and they're all linked up, isn't it pretty cool that that the batteries never went dead, and in fact they raised in charge? If what do we need the electric company for? We can just run wires across the ground and start poking them into the ground.
Well, we have all the information necessary to literally build energy systems that don't burn any fossil fuels, so that ought to shut that part of the crowd up. There shouldn't be anybody out there protesting fossil fuels. And if they really seriously believe in the whole global warming / climate change debacle, then we should be using all these alternative energy sources. You see what I'm trying to say here? Look, man, if you're hollering about it and we got an answer to fix it, then why aren't we fixing it? That's what I'm saying.
Because when you fix it, then they find a reason, oh, he went off the road and killed himself.
If you fix it, they ain't got nothing to holler about anymore. So they won't be happy. They got to have some sort of drama going on at all times. Otherwise, I think there are really seriously people out there who are literally addicted to fear porn. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You think I'm wrong? I mean, they want to be on the edge. Oh, doomsday's coming. Planet X is coming. The world is all dying. But even when the world is dying right before your very eyes and trees are falling over for no apparent reason, and then you got doggone chemical burns on the leaves, and then on the other side you got fish rolling up on the shore and whales and dolphins beaching themselves, and then you got 600 to 6,000 antelope just keel over dead, cows falling over, all the different bees coming up missing, weird bugs showing up on the scene. That ought to say something. I would, you know, as a guy who's been studying science all my life, that kind of is like a red flag to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, look. I use this fishbowl deal all the time. If you've got a goldfish in a bowl, and he's your pal, all right? Every so often you go in there, you check his water, you check the alkaline in there, and you test his water, and then you put a little bit of fresh water in, you keep his fishbowl clean, and every once in a while you might have to take him out of the fishbowl and put him in another clean one, and then clean up his favorite fishbowl. Alright, well, if you don't do that, and you just keep throwing food on there, and that little fish pees and poos in that doggone water long enough, the water will become so acidic that it'll burn the gills, and the fish can't breathe anymore, and then goes belly up, and then you have the moment of silence as you stand above the commode and hit the lever and watch him go down the whirlpool into the next dimension. Alright, that's what's going on. We're peeing and pooing in our own fishbowl. And ain't nobody cleaning it up except nature. And nature's so busy.
Yeah, nature's doing a good job of that and trying to put the oxygen back in there, clean up the acidity, and dropping fertilizer for the other plants and stuff like that there. But the chemicals are going out, knocking them down. So they got global warming, and basically all we're getting overgrown with is plankton.
Well, what?
And then it goes and wraps up in a little figure eight out there in the middle of the ocean between the continents. And the fish are trying to eat the plankton. They're getting their gills and everything is all getting clogged up with the little plastic particles that don't make it through. And so there we go again.
If you live in a house that's on a water table, all right, and a big corporation decides to come over there and build a pumping system downstream, and they pump all the water out from that water table, guess what? Your house is going in a hole. Okay? That's it. The hydraulic pressure just decreased to the extent that now your house is approximately 10, 20, 30 feet below the ground. That's common sense. You take the hydraulic pressure out from underneath your foundation, it will crack. That's why every time whenever there's a drought and your dirt gets dry, you go around your house and you'll find cracks in your basement.
Why they got earthquakes.
Yeah, then the rain will come back and soggy up the ground, and you'll see that your foundation is now leaking. Plus, your foundation is beginning to slip because now there is mud under there that was normally pressurized by the doggone hydraulic pressure up underneath your house. Now your house is going to the south, while the other house, other section of the house is going to the west. All right? It's common sense, folks.
Bonjour.
How you doing there, Steve?
Steve, how far art thou, great one?
I'm just back from my wedding anniversary.
Well, congratulations on your wedding anniversary.
Congratulations, Steve. We've been together 23 years now, but we've been married since 2008, so that's 7 years.
Cool.
And I'm not itching. Steve, why 3 years with the same woman? Oh, yeah.
Don't start it, Raymond. We know where you're going.
I was told that we were engaged longer than most American couples are actually married for.
Me and Boom and Shaziz have been married about 4 years at least.
Was that a Mormon marriage, and who's the wives?
Well, the Knights of the Round Table.
I missed it all, man. Anyway, look. So, where are we going to go from here? All right? We got solutions. Yeah?
You were talking about, pumping water out from underneath the foundations of a house.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of these water tables are kind of bell-shaped structures. Would you build a house on top of the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican?
Probably not, but see, if most of the houses out there were built on things because they got the people that will actually go around and check out the ground and tell you what's there, whether it's safe to build a big building or something like that. I can't remember what the word is.
A lot of the houses that are built, Shaziz, were built because a water diviner, somebody that walks around your land on with two bits of rods, said there's water here so you could dig a well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of houses, there's a lot of old houses that are built right over the top of that well.
Yeah, and the whole point of it is it's fundamental to human survival to have clean, fresh drinking water. And these hydraulic frackers want to pollute the water table so they can get gas.
Right, so they can seal it up so it doesn't leak, so they can fill it up and get the gas out. But they seal it up with is to you and I.
But here's the thing. All right, when you crack the ground, by definition, you can't see under the ground to the extent to see where all these cracks are going. So, like down at Louisiana, they decided they're going to do some drilling down there, and guess what? Punched through a salt mine and then drained off the swamp into the salt mine. Oops. All right, well, you can't see where that's going. And if you're releasing that gas pressure, regardless of what people think, the gas pressure is having the hydraulic effect up underneath the ground. And so if you suck all the gas out and there's no longer pressure up underneath there, then guess what? Your house is 20 or 30 feet shorter than it was yesterday.
So instead of parking in your parking bay, you're parking on your roof.
Yeah. So
I
you get out there.
That's not a good thing, is it?
You get out there
all
while
the heavy you're in the city, and then you wonder why they get all the sinkholes in the city. That's funny.
Yeah. You get out there while your neighbor's mowing his lawn and mow your roof because now that's where the grass is growing.
Well, I kind of get your point of what you're saying with, you know, goldfish. You know, if you keep messing in your own pond, sooner or later it's going to get polluted and you're not going to be able to survive.
Well,
and they keep telling us about how precious fresh water is. Well, why do they keep pumping it into the ground to get diesel, to get shale gas out?
Well,
how much fresh water do you need to extract shale gas?
Look, all right, Steve, let me ask you a question. You and I were standing out in the middle of the hottest desert, all right? And I'm standing next to everything necessary to literally purify water, desalinate it, or whatever. And I got this huge tank of salt water sitting right next to me, right? And you come up there with a bottle of water, and I'm sitting there complaining that I'm thirsty. What are you going to do?
Charge you for it.
There you go.
Isn't that the capitalist way?
That's it.
I've got something that you need to survive and you need to pay me. Because I don't really know why. I mean, it's...
to literally purify water. And you're going to be able to name your price because at that point I'm desperate.
Well... I don't know, I think this, back in history you had things called the common land, or the commons in kind of England. And they'd never have a battle on the commons, because that's where people grew their food for the village or the town or the city. They'd always have the battle somewhere else. And even a king wouldn't mess with the common ground, because he wouldn't get any food either. But we seem to have moved away from that now, where we've got science and technology where we don't need to have fresh edible vegetables and fruits and grazing land for animals, and you know.
Well, you know what's really crazy about the food section of the world is that there's a lot of places out there where it's illegal for you to like grow food and then sell it to your neighbors. You know, what a second hand.
Well, they call it's
okay.
They call it an offense.
Yeah,
they say it's an offense, and I say, well, I've always been offensive, so what's the difference?
Yeah. But if you go to your local grocery store, you have to kind of be real careful about what you buy because you don't know where.
You said something about you have a 5 gallon bottle of ocean water, and somebody I have a 5 gallon bottle of fresh water, and you want to buy my fresh water? I tell you what, I'd rather have my fresh. I'd rather have water to drink. And your money. So how about you can give me all your money for half of my 5 gallon bottle of water?
Well, at that point in the game, you're the one that holds the cards.
And you have to give me all of your 5 gallons of ocean water.
Yeah.
Now you have 2.5 gallons of fresh drinking water. I have 2.5 gallons of fresh drinking water, but I have 5 gallons of ocean water. Now, what I say is, hey. I'll make you a deal, all right? How about you give me your 5 gallons of fresh water? I mean, use 2.5 gallons of fresh water. I'll mix it with my 5 gallons of salt water that you just gave me, and your money. And I have 10 gallons of drinkable water because you take that ocean water and you mix it 50-50. Half fresh water and half ocean water, it is drinkable. So now I have all of your money and 5 gallons of drinkable water.
See, there's a bit of information that I've never heard before. Who'd have thunk it?
Who'd have what? Oh, thunk
it. Thunk it, yeah.
Thunk, yeah.
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 So, anyway, if you're standing next to the ocean and you're crying and boo-hooing that you got a drought going on, I'm sorry, but I can't really find too much pity in your situation. I'm more concerned about the guy that's really out there in the middle of the desert who has absolutely no water.
Oh, there you go.
All right, so let's go out there in the desert and help that guy first, because the other guys over there, when they realize that people like over in Dubai who have huge desalination plants have all the fresh water, they don't import water over there. They make it right there on the sea. They even make the land they stand on, man.
Now, you know, the thing, we've talked about this once before, and I've said this, and I'm going to say it again. The infrastructure in the United States is already there. It exists. There are many, many, many times just in the past 5 or 6 years that we have had severe droughts in the Midwest and the western part of the United States, and unbelievable flooding in the eastern part of the United States. And the infrastructure is there to take that excess water and pump it all across the United States. The infrastructure exists. It's not something that we have to build. We just have to use our heads. Gasoline, diesel fuel, and water don't mix. So you just pump the water through the gasoline pipes that distribute fuel all over the United States. Just pump it out to the Midwest. The people, where they're flooding, they're not using fuel anyway. So use the pipes. I mean, they're flooding. They can't be driving anywhere. I mean, daggone, come on, you folks, give me a break. It's not something that, it's not rocket science. Well, it's just plain used common sense.
The thing is, I think we got the wrong individuals up there running the ship, you know. It's like, I'm kind of advocating somewhat of a mutiny going on here, because it's like, you know, if you see the captain deliberately driving the boat towards the iceberg, and you, if you've ever watched the movie Titanic, it didn't turn out so well for those folks.
All right.
So if the captain's driving the deal over there, they'll say, "Hey, little buddy, come over here. We got you a helmet and a nice, comfy seat with some seat belts so you don't fall out when we hit this iceberg, you know." And once we get him all comfortable and fed and everything, and his little sippy cup, we can kind of steer that boat away from that iceberg. That's the way it's going to have to be done, because the way, as it stands, it's braced for impact, you know. You know, there's a lot of brilliant individuals out there that have solutions to all the problems that we're talking about.
Okay.
How you doing there, Stone?
Super. Don't you think if we're going to really work on solutions, we got to get back to where the problem started? You know, if you look back at some of the things they did a long time ago, like this planned obsolescence, when they put that in place, and it was an orchestrated thing. They actually came up with a plan. We're going to make it so a light bulb will only last so long, and there's a law that said your light bulb can only last so long. Otherwise, you won't be able to sell light bulbs, and yada yada yada. And they made, so now everything is made to wear out. Nothing's made to last anymore. It's a scheme.
But Stone,
we're capable or not.
There is a secret out there above all secrets. It doesn't matter whether the incandescent bulb is burnt out or whether the fluorescent burn is bulb out. Raymond and I have already proven that they can be lit up. All right, so planned obsolescence failed on them on that episode.
It's not just the light bulb anymore, though.
No, it ain't.
It's not the light bulb. It's everything. Everything you build is built to wear out. And you were talking about, you know, garbage and landfills and all that sort of stuff. Well, there's no reason that our stuff wears out. It's because they planned it this way. Right? And why is hemp illegal? We should be using hemp.
Yeah, there's like 50,000 products that can be made out of hemp.
Everything can be made out of hemp, and it grows really fast.
Clothes, Barry Prince wears nothing but hemp. Now, he says it's like wearing pajamas, and it's tough. So,
there's the thing. See, at the bottom, we figured out how to light up bad light bulbs, all right? And as far as fixing the world, while you're over there raking the leaves out of your yard and trying to use your leaves for compost, your neighbor's over there with a leaf blower blowing his leaves onto your yard. So your job never ends on there, and you end up with a large pile of compost. And so now you have cornered the market in compost. There's always...
Like,
there's always a plus at the end of it if you know where to look. You know, these guys out there who own the landfills, there are some companies out there that literally make money off of that landfill. They'll bring your trash out there. They built machines to separate the trash, and they actually have workers out there pulling off big chunks of metal and stuff like that and sorting it out in piles. And they're making money off your trash plus charging you to haul it off.
So, in the Republic of Ireland, the local recycling centre encourages you bring in your grass cuttings so they can sell it back to the public as compost.
See?
I saw the garbage trucks pulling up to the back of McDonald's. Good thing
they were coming up with food. In Lewisville, Texas, has been using the landfill to make methane gas for the past 20 years. And they would use the gas to boil water, make steam, and turn a turbine, make electricity, and sell it back to the grid. Now, the thing is, they are making billions of dollars a day just hauling in trash. In other words, they are charging you millions of dollars a day to take your trash, turn it into a product that they can use to make electricity and sell it back to you. So you can either take your trash off and then pay them for the electricity they make with your trash.
Okay, Hold your thought. I got to get this in.
No, you talk for a half hour.
With everything that you all said, all right, with everything that we've all talked about right here, all right, and you say, everybody keeps saying they do this, they do that. Who's allowing these folks to do this to each and every one of us? That's the key.
Well, that's right. And so that's what I started to address it when I first came on, was getting back to where these problems started. You know, you got to find the people that started some of these things and the organizations that are behind it, the corporations, the big cartels almost, like the sugar industry and the wood industry and some of the large industries, they're like the cartels behind some of this manipulation of all the information and our ability to get outside of the paradigm that we're stuck in.
Well, they got a patent structure out there for a reason, and it ain't necessarily for everyone out there's benefit who comes up with an idea, because even patents have a time limit on them. So, you know, all you got to do from when the patent finally goes out is alter it just slightly, and then you can actually restart selling deals, all right? But the whole deal is, when you go to try to get a patent on something, to try to market something, to get something on the market, now you got a bunch of different regulations that you have to contend with as well. You have to have safety checks and some sort of bonding that says that if anybody gets hurt, you got the money to pay the damages or whatever. And so, you know, there's a whole lot more to actually getting something on the market. All right, so all the companies that already got their foot in the door, they're doing fine because they're lifelong. They've been there for years. You know, they've already they grandfathered in before all the new regulations. Now, if I'm a company and I cornered the market on light bulbs, and I don't want anybody else selling light bulbs, I want to make it as hard as possible for anyone else to sell light bulbs. So I'm gonna send my lobbyists down there to try to get some more regulations thrown on there, so the next guy coming in line has to prove it's perfectly safe what he's doing and all this. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. After that, what Amy was saying too, you know, when I was in Sweden, I went there a few years back, or 10, 15 years ago, and they had this huge refinery thing, and that's where they took the garbage, and they did exactly what Raymond's saying. They burned the garbage, created electricity and steam, heated all the houses, made electricity, the whole bit. And now I find out Sweden's running out of garbage. They're trying to get other people's garbage because they need more. They don't have enough.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people who would love to give them their garbage because they're having to pay to get rid of it anyway. You know, with it, with all the waste, with all the craziness, with all the corruption, and the next big common sense question that I'm going to ask the world is, why aren't we the people doing it ourselves? You don't have to get out there and try to become a millionaire.
I got an answer to that. It's because we're a nanny state, and we think the government's going to do it for us. We everybody thinks it's the same as insurance and stuff. We don't take responsibility for our actions anymore. You just buy insurance, and then if you make a mistake, well, it's covered. I got insurance.
Yeah.
I don't have to be responsible for myself anymore.
And the insurance companies have gotten so crazy that your credit reference is also factored into how much your insurance costs.
Well, that's interesting, she says, because I haven't got a credit rating, because I haven't had a bank account for 5 years.
Yeah, well, here in the States, they've got this deal going on now that they run a credit check on you when you get your doggone insurance, and it is factored into how much your doggone your premium's going to be. And they did that because there were other companies out there who were trying to figure out a way to get people to pay for bills that they weren't paying for. And so they figured out all kinds of different methods, like attaching it to your insurance company, or deals where they could sell your debt off to somebody else who in turn would call you every single day until they drove you insane and you decided to pay.
Have you a property? Huh? Oh, you want to get them into my eyes?
I kept a bill collector on the line, a lady on the line, for probably about almost an hour, and I had her laughing so hard whenever she got off the phone that she forgot why she even called. Because
I must say that I do try and sell them stuff.
Yeah.
I say, well, I tell you what, I'm not really into the whole monetary system, but I do barter. And I've got a big pile of manure out the back. How much of a discount on the insurance can I get if I can truck 2 tons of horse manure down to your call center?
Well, I was
that's gold that is to gardeners.
I was pretty much just offering my services that I would come over and wash the windows and, you know, clean the blinds and maybe mow the lawn and stuff like that, you know, do some dishes and, you know, told her whenever I thought I'd go stay with her and, you know, and I'll do all this work around the house until the debt's cleared and that kind of stuff. And, man, by the time it was all said and done, that lady was in tears. She was laughing so hard.
Well, you know the way they try and roll over you in a conversation and get you to agree to something that you don't particularly want to agree to?
Yeah.
They were kind of getting a bit freaked out because I said, okay, right, Tuesday at 10:30, I'll have the truck come round, I'll get it dumped in the car park, and then you can do what you want with it. I said, so that's a deal, is it? I just would like to point out that this is what we call a verbally binding contract. And I gave the same spiel to them that they give to us. I said, by agreeing to this contract, you do realize you're entering into a legally binding blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, they go away very quickly.
You should always start by telling them this call's been recorded as well.
Yeah.
They always do that, too. This call's been recorded. Oh, yeah, I'm recording it, too. Then that sets them up. Quick.
Yeah, I'm going to try
that. I'd like to inform you that this call is being recorded because we actually find you very hilarious, and I'm sure a lot of people on YouTube would like to hear the sound of your voice as well. It would actually save you ringing thousands and thousands of people, because YouTube gets quite a lot of viewers.
That's a great plan, man. So anyway, back to the whole deal. One person we hadn't heard from yet, Stuart, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. I'm just listening.
So what do you think about all this?
I could have made a million comments. I was actually thinking of a discussion that Muddy and I were having the other night about how I think he was telling me about the dramas he was having with his house, and I said, well, maybe you should pull down your house and why don't you build one of those big windmill houses like they have in Holland? And he said, oh, what a great idea.
Yeah.
I said, imagine the magnets you could put on that.
Yeah,
you don't need a tower. You don't need a tower. They have no idea if you have a generator or if you're just grinding your bread or what. I think it's pretty cool.
You could probably do both. Now, that's a brilliant idea. I ain't seen one of those windmill houses for years, man, but those were pretty cool.
And people will come 3 miles around just to see it.
Yeah, I never.
You know what the prime,
so you can get up your driveway.
Huh.
You know what the primary function of the windmill in Holland was?
What?
It wasn't for grinding bread, it was for pumping water.
Well, see, there you go, man. It's look, necessity is the mother of invention. You could build you a windmill house, and a lot of people out there won't complain about it as long as it's built nice and looks good, because it adds to the landscape. I mean, those are beautiful, man. And so you could generate your power, you could pump your water, and cool your house all with the same big old windmill. It's brilliant.
And your house would spin around at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, just switch it down the transmission and gear it off somewhere else.
My advice is only this: don't put it in Tornado Alley, because your windmill house might turn into a helicopter.
Well, right, and you'll have the aviation authority on your back.
Yeah, the aviation authority will get you. You can't fly that house around here, mister. What? You ain't gonna last it. You're going to jail.
We'll go to Oz and get some of them flying monkeys and bring them back and sell them for big money.
Well, that's a good idea. And if you're going green anyway, I guess you could have the monkey give you a ride to work. Hey, I saw the movie. They were hauling people around in the Wizard of Oz.
We can steal some pieces of the road, too.
Somebody get Monsanto on the phone. We need some flying monkeys.
You sure that wasn't the Wizard of Oz?
I mean, Monsanto are my flying monkeys,
Anyway, I'm just saying, look, we got to get to some common sense, and we got to spread the word as far and wide that there are people out there actually speaking common sense and actually trying to do something. Raymond and I have been working on a couple projects together behind the scenes, and Muddy's got some stuff that he's been working on in the alternative energy. See, I can't do anything about, you know, the whole gardening thing over there, because that's not necessarily my best school of knowledge. I know I could make a garden, I'd be all right. I could get some food to grow out of there, but whether it'd be as good as like Steve's. You know, Steve's into aquaponics and hydroponics and stuff like that, so he knows, he's got a lot of information on there. All the information combined.
LED lighting for it all, he knows all that stuff.
Yeah, plus he makes beer. So, so we can get everybody together to, we need to do like an experimental community and actually have it marketed to the extent that's like a reality TV show, where we take a piece of ground and we actually make it completely self-contained, where it powers itself, it sustains itself for food, and show that it's actually possible to do, and actually make a few pennies in the process, you know. There's so much potential out there. And if we did it, if we did this with all recycled stuff, like the X13, you know, I was pretty impressed when Raymond brought that X13 motor out. It came out of an old air conditioner. And you can see in the video that I did called X13 that I'm just sitting there flicking this thing with my finger, and I'm producing like up to 29 volts just by sitting there flicking it with my finger. Just barely turning.
Yeah, most of it was going through your fingers.
Oh, yeah. Shocked the crud out. That's what Raymond wanted. Every time I got shocked, he didn't have the camera on me. He's wanting me to reach over and touch it while he was filming. Like, I'm not going to, like, do it on purpose.
and just a giggling. I can hear him in the background. Just a giggling.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, did you hand him your electric fly swatter?
No. No, I told him I didn't want to have to call the medics out there for a heart attack. No, I'm back on the Raymond giggling over there. We were sitting out there and running some experiments with that X13 while we were running it with another motor. And old Raymond's only pointing out something, and he gets his arm too close to the leads off the AC deal. Actually put some marks on him, some burn marks from how much power that sucker was pushing out. I just shillelagh looked over at him and gave him that look like, hey, welcome to the world of electricity.
Yeah, 450 and 600 volts is what I took that time.
Oh yeah, it's at least 450. It was a lot.
Anyway,
he likes it. Like, he says it tastes good.
Well, this time the look on his face was, it was like, he was shocked and he was looking right at me like, you know, it was my fault. I mean, it wasn't my fault, you put your arm on it.
No, it wasn't my fault. Why weren't you holding the camera, daggone it?
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking more, Raymond, you know, you really thought your breakdancing days were over till you touched those two terminals.
Yeah, and he's got some moves for an old guy.
That's why I bought it. The cameras, tripods, because the next time we're together, I'm going to film every minute. That
yeah, that's it. Every angle.
I made Boomer a Sterling Engine. We went to Pam's restaurant and ate. And we had to, I fired that thing up in the restaurant. Everybody was looking. And I had that old torch flame on the bottom of it. And that thing was just turning and turning. And then I handed it to Boomer. I was trying to say, grab it from the thing. He grabbed it from the bottom where it was hot. And he said, oh, it just didn't... I said, burn yourself? He said, no, it just doesn't take me long to look at it.
I just wondering if Raymond's hair, did Raymond's hair look like yours just when he got chopped?
His eyes kind of look crooked. I was concerned about it.
Come on.
But they went back to normal. Yeah.
Just on a slightly different note, you've got 5 new videos up on your website. 13-18 part 1 to part 5.
Yeah, those have been up there for a while.
Yeah, I just haven't seen it. I was just wondering what it was about.
Well, you got to watch the series.
You know, you got to have a look at this.
What's that thing you're doing in your yard with the gray boxes?
You gotta watch the series.
You know, Shazam, that you and I made together where you were lighting up the burnt-out fluorescent lights with oil, a trash oil igniter.
Yep.
And I told you this morning, just before we went on the air, that I acquired one, but mine was 110-volt input, and what I did last night, they come in the mail by watt meter. So this morning, I fired that thing up and had 2 bulbs fastened end to end with a jumper and went around and hooked up both ends to the oil igniter, and I put my watt meter on it, and I was using 18 to 18.4 watts to light 2 40-watt light bulbs.
Yep. See, with those series that they're talking about on there and what you just said right there, I'm trying to get people in the mindset to where they'll step outside the box long enough to have that eureka moment that I had. I'm trying to point out something that is so blatantly obvious that it's just mind-boggling. And then I could just blurt it out. If I just blurt it out, then I'm going to be called everything under the sun. I've been down this road before. Every time I make any kind of claim whatsoever, I got all the people that come in there and says, well, no, you can't do this because it'll never work because of that or whatever. If we did go to the moon, which I'm hoping that we did because, you know, I think I like space, but if we did go to the moon, then somebody in some point in history looked up at the moon and said, man, sure luck to fly up there. And if everybody told him that you're stupid and you can't go to the moon, it's not possible for this reason or that reason or whatever, we would have never went to the moon. And since I don't believe that the laws of physics are written in stone, and even as a backup to what I just now got through saying, CERN come out here recently and said, because of what we've seen here at our reactor or our collider, we may have to rewrite the laws of physics. It's okay when they come out and say now that we may have to rewrite the laws of physics, but when some crazy mad-haired science guy is sitting there trying to point out the blatantly obvious, he's a nut. You see what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a village idiot as well. I mean, I grew up that way, and even my parents used to say, well, if it was that easy, everybody would be doing it. You know, I used to come up with harebrained ideas, and well, if it was that easy, everybody would be doing it. Well, that really holds people down when you do that.
That's right. And there's some folks that's on my YouTube, subscribe to my YouTube channel, that figured it out a long time ago. There's at least 100 of them. And they figured it out a long time ago, what I've been showing everybody. And they know. And they haven't said anything. Now, they could have went out there and put a video up and said, look, this is what he's trying to show everybody. But they didn't. They're wanting to follow this all the way through and see what it is that I'm trying to show everybody. And it's going to be so... So
hey, I want to make that black and white TV oscilloscope. That's what I want to make.
Well, and that was junk. See, there you go. That little example right there, that little oscilloscope, that analog TV, I mean, that was junk. People throw those in the trash. They try to give them away to people. Nobody wants them because they're no longer useful. But I go out there and I'll find all this old electronics that everybody else can't stand or don't know what it is, and I'll buy it up for, you know, pennies on the dollar when I know the true value of it. I mean, like that Beckett oil burner igniter. I just bought another one thanks to my friend helping me get some equipment that I need. I just bought another one for $85. That one, that the first one I got, I found in a flea market for $30 because nobody knew what it was.
I got me a big screen flat top TV sitting at the shop I need to repair. That's what I'm going to do it, because it's color. I'm going to show all three phases, red, green, and blue. That way I'll have three waves going across there. When they get to a sink, I can sit there and show that. When I crank the generator, show how the dual permanent magnet rotor axial flux wind turbine generator. I'll spin that sucker and show them just how pretty those sine waves are.
Cool. Shazam, buddy. I want to ask both of you a question. The Beckett oil burner igniter, on the label it says input 110 volts to 3.5 amps, which comes out to 385 watts. However, on the output side it says 20,000 volts at 35 milliamps, which comes out 700 watts. So according to the label, is putting out almost double the wattage that's being put in. How can that be?
Well, because it's pulsed.
First of all, let me point out a couple
things.
They're
not talking RFS. They're talking about the instantaneous output.
If you go to the second video in the series of Free Thinkers, you will see that this thing is lit up. And to this very day, and Raymond was out here, and it was lit up. And in my room for the last probably 2 or 3 days, there has been a little circuit going in there that essentially uses a magnetic ballast. Now, a magnetic ballast is a simple concept when you understand how it functions. Whenever you energize a copper wire, you get a magnetic field that is created. There is also, according to Lenz's law, a second magnetic field that is created instantaneously when you first pulse that coil. So it's called back EMF. Well, as that field is collapsing, there's a secondary inside there where that now is taking that back EMF, that pulse of that deal, and sending it back out to the same two wires. So if you take one of these magnetic ballasts and you put one on a 9-volt...
By the ohms on it. So you get one of those little audio transformers out of the back of that little pocket radio, uses a 9-volt battery. And you go to the 8-ohm side of that audio transformer, and the other side is 1,000 ohms. So you take that 9-volt, which is even more... So you're going to get a little more than 1,000 volts out the other side, but only if it's AC. So when you first connect the battery, you hold it, and then you hand it to somebody, and you hang on to the battery as they pick it up. You get to watch them learn instant breakdancing lessons.
Yeah.
So what's the highest number of ROPs that you've ever attempted?
Who, me?
Well, any of us.
Brian Abrams has got like 700-something ROPs on the secondary of his Tesla coil.
How many ROPs of that coil can you have? Or, I mean, of the wire, like...
Well, actually, it's unlimited. It's unlimited because what Tesla talked about was the surface area being the most important portion. All right, so
what is that? Really big, really big.
You just don't go for a second row, because by the time you get to the end and you start over at the end, then you got voltage between the wires instead of just a few volts between each wrap. So, yeah, you can go as far as you want. Matter of fact, you know, he told me, he said, I sent you this one. I said, I need to send you one. So, that's Ryan Abrams of Abrams Lab, Tesla Art. Anyway, he's gonna send me one there, and he said it's for my shop because it's 12 volts. So he's gonna hook that, allow me to, or he's got a design for hooking up to the 12 volts. And he said if, you don't even need a top load if you just want to run a wire. Because you noticed in my shop I got like six sets of double fluorescent tubes. He said all you gotta do is run a wire to one end of it, each of those tubes, and you'll light every one of them up real bright. So. Yeah, I'm kind of waiting on that. And, you know, he says, the input isn't much. I'm going to get a lot more light out of that thing, just like Boomer was saying. You know, he's lighting up, what, 80 watts worth of stuff on 18 watts. So, yeah, I'm kind of tickled to think about that.
Well, when it comes...
Here's an interesting one for you guys. If you're talking about ballasts, digital ballasts are very common in horticultural lighting systems because it controls the amount of power that goes to the bulb. And the specs on the standard 600 watt, which is probably the most efficient of the Lumitec ballasts that most people use for their own projects, the input current is 3 amps, and the input power can range from about 380 to 695 watts. The output power can be 360 to 660. It depends on whether you're using what they call a booster switch for the flowering period, the final couple of weeks of the flowering period. You knock up the booster switch and it puts out more lumens, but its operating frequency is 90 kilohertz.
Wow.
All right, gentlemen, I have in my hand right now a taser that puts out 20 million volts. I'm going to tell you what I did with it the other day, about 3 days ago.
Guys, put your tongue on it.
Yeah, don't do that.
Guys, put your tongue on it again.
Alright, hold a minute. You hear
Dang.
That?
Was that your lip
pattern? Hey, answer me a question, Raymond. Can you smell ozone every time you do that?
Just about.
Yeah.
Hey, alright, but what I did now is the tips that where it arcs between them, they're held on with little tiny nuts. I loosened the nuts and turned them away from each other, put it back, and that way it didn't arc, but they were live. So I put an alligator clip, a jumper wire on each one, and then more jumper wires, and put that on two fluorescent, burnt out fluorescent lights that were end to end, and it lit both of them.
Okay, now listen to me. If you take and put a spark gap in between there that is shorter than the actual prongs that are on the taser itself, you just want the gap to be look just slightly shorter, and you can actually adjust it to be even faster by making it shorter. All right, you'll get a lot better results when you allow that to jump across that spark gap than you will be for a direct connection on there.
Okay,
yeah, well, you'll get a higher frequency when you get a smaller spark gap because it doesn't take as much of a charge to jump it, and then you have to recharge again.
Because essentially what those are... Essentially what those prongs are is a spark gap. You've got high enough voltage to literally leap across that. That's why the voltage is so incredibly high on there. You can pulse a Tesla coil with that right there in your hand. And how many batteries does it take?
I haven't opened it up yet. Like I said, I bought four of them. One for my wife, one for your wife, and two for you and me to play with.
Cool.
Because it's a combination flashlight and taser, and the flashlight is super, super bright. Super bright.
Jesus, have you ever heard of a guy by the name of Aaron Murakami? He's with a company called Tesla Chargers. He's written and patented a plasma spark ignition using a series of diodes and a multi-spark ignition system, and it will... it'll make a plasma ball the size of a golf ball.
Yeah.
Cool.
You can find it on TeslaChargers.com. I actually get an email, I think it's Energy Times newsletter, and it tells you all sorts of amazing stuff. I was telling Money Mudman about this the other day, about all the guys in their group that are doing all this amazing switching technology and beating lenses law. And there's another guy I was just looking at a minute ago who's created a pump using this plasma ignition system, and he's able to pump water over mountains using the water as the fuel using this plasma ignition system.
Yeah. If you have opportunity, throw some links over in the chat room on that, because I'd be really interested in looking, because I know what they're talking about with that plasma ball. Look.
Well, you burn the water, you pump the water up the mountain, then you use the pressure back on a turbine, then repump it back up there, and you got your own killer generator system.
You don't even have to burn the water. You can actually heat the water, because when Raymond was out here, him and I was doing some experiments with the X13, and we were actually creating plasma inside one of the fluorescent bulb starters. And Lenz's law never came into play throughout this entire deal, all right? And until the plasma inside there heated up that thermal switch and made the circuit so that the incandescent light bulb that we had in series with it kicked on. That's when the back EMF occurred. That's when the generator slowed down. But while it was in the plasma state, it was there generating heat with absolutely no back EMF. So if you could visualize a plasma reactor with a coil of wire or a coil of copper tubing or whatever, stainless steel would be probably better, some tubing inside there, that whatever liquid you pump through that plasma would be instantaneously heated. You see what I'm talking about? So you're transferring that energy without getting no back EMF. All you're doing is changing the frequency. You're just changing the energy from one form to another.
And so you're doing plasma underwater, right?
No. Look, imagine a glass tube that has argon gas in there, and you got your anodes and cathodes in there for sending the high voltage inside the gas. You energize the gas to the plasma state. Plasma produces heat. And so that heat would then in turn heat the tubes that are inside the chamber. Just the argon plasma itself would put the heat into the tubing. Alright, whatever you pump through that tubing would then get hot. And at whatever certain intensity, that it would get to the point where that water would instantaneously turn to steam, which in that case you could pump up over the top of the mountain with no problems whatsoever, and then recondense it on the other side and let that falling water drop back down, and that mass and that weight creating a suction with the Venturi effect would actually do a whole lot more work on the way back. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah. When Aaron was able to make that plasma spark, he sprayed water on it, like a water vapor, and he said, and the spark just went crazy. They actually, there's a video they put out with a lawnmower that they had with one cylinder, and I think he just used a coil and a series of his diodes and stuff in series, and he had it sitting there idling, and the moment he flicked the switch, this lawnmower went crazy. But he said, with these tests that he did on the bench, he shows you the photographs of the initial ignition spark, and then as he got it up to this plasma spark, he sprayed water on it, and it just went crazy, because the plasma, I think it must have been such a high frequency or current or whatever it was, that it broke the molecules of the water up into hydrogen and oxygen, and it virtually just exploded.
Yeah. See, under their own laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. All we're doing is moving it from point A to point B. So nothing in the laws of physics says that we can't take one form of energy, such as AC current at 60 hertz, and then generate power at an extremely large amount of high voltage and then change that energy from one form to another. I've already done it. Lidmotor's done it. Rimstar.org's done it. I've done it. There's many people out there who have done it. We've taken static electricity and charged capacitors. We've taken Tesla RF frequency off of Slayer exciters and charged capacitors. All we're doing is moving energy from one point to the next and changing that energy back into a usable voltage again. So, you know, all the technology is right there in front of everybody's face. And it happened at all along.
I have a question. How much potential energy is there between ice and water?
Well, I would say there's quite a bit.
There should be.
In my opinion. It takes so much heat to get it to right to 212 degrees Fahrenheit or 100 Celsius. And then it takes so many butanes to turn that from at that temperature to break it over into steam. That's the thing.
Yeah, but maybe you're doing it wrong. Maybe that gizmo that Raymond brought over here, which was a sonic mister that basically took water and made a fog, maybe that would be the key. You take that sonic wave, it'll shake apart anything. You know, at the right frequency, it'll do it. Your microwave oven, you know, water's a dipole molecule. It has a negative and a positive on it. And so when you send that microwave in there, it's a super short, fast wave, and they don't go out as far as people think they do. If you take I've done this before. I took a microwave oven completely out of its casing. Now, it's, according to everybody else, this is lethal. You don't want to do that. I put a glass of water in front of that thing, and it would boil. I scooted it over a little bit further, and it wouldn't boil. So it was only traveling, that microwave coming out of that antenna, the magnetron, was only traveling at the maximum 6 inches before it was interrupted by the atmosphere in the air and changed that microwave into what is no longer a microwave. You see what I'm saying? The wave was slowed down by the interaction between the atmosphere that was out there in the room. Now, it's blatantly obvious I don't want to stand right in front of that thing because I'll get a sunburn from you know where and, you know, not look so well. But I did it, all right? And so it's all it was a matter of changing the frequency. That's what that doggone cage is right there in front of your... if you look inside your microwave oven door, you'll see a metal screen in there that has a bunch of holes in there. It's called a Faraday cage. It is strictly so that you can still see in the microwave, but any wave that comes up out of that is going to no longer be a microwave because it's going to bounce off of that Faraday cage and change the frequency of it. So,
yeah, shortening it.
Yeah, that's that.
Actually bouncing it back in.
And the reason why all these people that are working with Slayer Exciters aren't able to get further than 15 or 20 feet away from their frequency that they're doing is for the same fact. First off, the Slayer Exciter is producing a massive, super fast acting switch. Is that the TIP42C transistor is turning off and on so rapidly that it's producing a wave. That wave is going out, and instantaneously, the wave is collapsing. It's going out and collapsing. So if you put 9 volts to it, you'll get a few inches. If you put 100 volts to it, you might get several feet. But you're not going to get any further than that because the frequency is so high that it doesn't have time to do what a Tesla coil does, where when the wave goes out and it collapses, by the time the one wave collapses, the next wave's coming in and bumps that one. And so it is the interaction of these two waves colliding with each other that pushes it out further and further. You see what I'm saying? That's why an old citizen's band radio, you can go 5 miles with it. You put a linear on there, which now is something that is bumping that wave out even farther, and now you can talk clear to Mexico from the United States with a 300-watt linear, all right, because it's bumping that wave out. With a Slayer Exciter, the wave is happening, it's expanding and collapsing so rapidly that you'll never get farther. No matter how many voltage you put, you might get it to the extreme to where you can't even stand next to that Slayer Exciter because it'll fry you. to maybe 100 feet down the road, you'll get that light bulb to light up. But the field is happening and collapsing so fast that it's not it doesn't have the time for to do like a regular Tesla coil would, where it's bumping that wave out. It's the next wave coming in. It's bumping the one that's trying to collapse. You see what I mean? So you could actually take that technology, such as the Solar Exciter, and you can tune it. You could build a custom linear that would literally take that signal coming out of it, because it's a radio frequency. You can take and build a linear for your Solar Exciter that would literally bump that wave out and send it miles down the road, as opposed to just feet. Does anybody understand that?
Looks like Stone's got to leave. I don't know. Is there anything else you wanted to break in with before you run off? Oh, looks like he left.
He's on his way out to slay dragons.
I gotta go help the wife, so I'll catch you guys later.
All right, gotta keep the wife happy. You take care of Stone. Appreciate you being on the show.
Okay, thanks for letting me on, yep.
No problem. All
right.
So, if we wanted to do wireless energy transfer, we have all the technology to do it. We just got to understand how those frequency waves are working. You know, you throw.
Yeah, we just got to start picking better frequencies that don't harm us.
Yeah, exactly. And they're out there. I mean, any frequency out there can be stored as potential energy in capacitor banks, and there's tons of different material. You don't even have to have copper wire to get wireless energy transfer. You know, if you take that same oil burner igniter that Raymond and I was talking about, and you put a spark gap in between that and a metal block of any metal, it don't have to be copper, it could be just flat out iron. All right, and when the spark gap is when the energy is jumping across that gap to that iron, it is creating a frequency wave. All right, and it's doing it at a rate that is higher than your normal electricity, so you can actually hold a doggone fluorescent bulb or an LED out there in the general vicinity, and you will get wireless energy transfer. So the only thing that is happening with the copper wire is, number one, it's like the railroad tracks, and number two, it is for the surface area. The more turns you got on there, the higher the potential voltage, and then we're talking about with a regular Tesla coil. You're going to have, it's an air core transformer. When the primary pulses, it sends a wave up the secondary. Now, it starts to energize all the electrons in the secondary, and you'll note that the top load is not attached to anything. It's a single wire system from the earth ground to the bottom of the primary that goes up to the top load. And so when the primary pulses, it sends a wave up the secondary, and as that wave is going up energizing and it begins to collapse, by that time the second wave is coming in and it bumps that wave up again. And the waves are coming in timed out just right so that every time the field is trying to collapse, the one right behind it is bumping it forward until it finally builds up such a substantial amount of high voltage that it literally ionizes the air around the top load, and that energy has to go somewhere. So as opposed to sending it out wirelessly, now you take that same concept, you build a reactor system that has essentially a Tesla coil in a bubble, and you have argon gas inside there, like the old mercury arc rectifier. When you fire this doggone thing, it will start energizing that gas into the plasma state. Now you are creating heat that could be drawn off from, and you're also creating a massive amount of pressurized high voltage that could in turn use to pulse the next system in line. What do you think?
Sounds anybody? Like a gang though. Yeah, once you get to a certain voltage and you get that ionization, the resistance just breaks right down.
Yeah, and so the reason why I mentioned that the top load on the other side isn't connected to anything, the top load on the other side, the whole secondary, the whole primary is a transmitter / receiver. So you can take and make two identical Tesla coils, and you could transfer that energy from one side to the other side and then step that energy back down into usable voltage. Deeds has done it. Terry Woodruff has done it. Ryan's done it. There's so many people out there. Rimstar.org, Lid Motor, all these guys. And they're working on really super efficient motors that are running off of just energy in capacitors. So all this stuff, man, it's right there. I mean,
Says, have you heard of that SEG that John Searle supposedly made?
The one that they said had levitation effects to it?
Well, that and many other things, yeah. The Searle effect generator running on magnets with a series of rollers, eight rollers, that had a magnetic wave imprinted on them.
Oh yeah, there's some folks out there working on custom made magnets where they're literally putting the magnet together a particle at a time, trying to make monopole magnets. They're doing pretty amazing work with that. But on that part where I was talking about how the Searle generator was able to achieve levitation is what they're saying.
At a million volts, I think it was.
I'll tell you why I believe it. Because when Raymond had dropped off the X-13 to me, and I was sitting there tinkering around with this thing, because the voltage that was coming out of there was high enough that I figured, I'm going to take and real quick, I'm going to pull the plug off the AC power and shove that plug down inside the outlet of the outlet power on the X-13. And believe it or not, that doggone thing started to run under its own power until it finally wound down. Because of the load on there. That's why I'm going to add a flywheel to it. But either way, I said, okay, well, I can't switch this fast enough. So I left the AC power attached, and I left the other output side on the other side attached, and that doggone X-13 got up and walked across the yard. So you had two counterposing fields that were interacting with each other that literally lifted the weight of that X-13 and walked it across the yard. I saw it. So, you know, there is something to magnetism. If you look at graphite on top of a neodymium magnets, you'll watch. Crazy Russian hacker just did a video about graphite on top of neodymium magnets. He had four little square neodymium magnets and a little square chunk of graphite, set it right on top of the magnets, and it floated. All right? RWG research showed that with bismuth, you can actually take a magnet and hang it from the top, and you can take a magnet and put it on the bottom, put bismuth in between there, and you can get magnetic levitation right there in the center. Because it keeps it from the field, it keeps it being able to track to one side, it equals out that field right dead center, and that thing will float. And there was another guy out there that did one that's called tractor beam magnets, where he literally had a magnet system set up where he could put a magnet in the general vicinity and it would attract it, but it wouldn't attract it all the way to the magnets. It was locked into place, and he could drag that thing around like a toy train, and it was the magnetism that was pulling that, but it never jumped towards the magnet to the extent where it connected with the other magnet. It was locked right there in place. If you haven't seen that video, go look on YouTube and look for tractor beam magnet and see how that guy was doing that.
There's another company out there that's actually using the Earth's magnetic field to regenerate the power in their devices, and one of them was a flashlight that they had. And he said, "You can." I've got the thing on that as well. He said, "You can use this torch or flashlight, as you guys call it, for 12 hours straight, and then you just sit it down on a bench, and it recharges itself overnight."
Well, and I believe that too, because not only is the Earth got a magnetic field, but we're surrounded by all kinds of frequencies. Any frequency out there is generating a magnetic field. It's like if you throw one pebble in the pond, that's one wave. You throw a couple other different sized pebbles in the pond, now you got multiple waves in all different directions. That's essentially what we're floating in, a sea of energy, where every time somebody keys up on a radio, you can capture that into and charge your batteries with that. You know, there's so many different cell phones on different frequencies. There's CB radios. There's radio waves coming from space. There's radio waves coming from the sun. There's tons and tons of energy out there. We're floating in the sea of energy. I keep telling everybody, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it.
I never did see what happened to that little thing that you had going on out in the backyard there, but look, I know a lot about electronics and stuff like that, but from what I've seen, what you were doing, that's why I made the comment, I think you're making your own version of a mini Philadelphia experiment, it'd be great, baby. You said, I think that's your favorite comment.
Well, if you can visualize let's say you got a bucket, right? And you want to fill this bucket up. And it doesn't really matter how you fill it up. You just want to get this bucket full. And so, it's not always raining. So you walk down to the creek and you grab a little bit of water out the creek in a coffee can, and then you bring it up there and you pour that in the bucket. Well, meanwhile, maybe it starts to rain. That water starts going down in the bucket. You know, you got your gutter off the side of your house diverted into the bucket. So you've got, from all different directions, essentially feeding into a centralized storage container all different forms of energy. So as it's all funneling in, it's charging up the bucket. It's filling it.
Yep.
See what I'm saying? And none of that you ever had to do anything to get. So if you go back and you look at the second video that I'm doing, and the second video that I did on free thinkers, it should have caught everybody's mind. Wait a second. Hey, he's pulling energy. He's pulling static electricity. He's pulling wind power. He's pulling solar power. He's pulling earth battery power. And then some inside this deal. There are radio frequencies involved with this. There's a spark gap on this thing that has a solar-powered charger that is literally charging up a capacitor bank that is sending a charge across that to that turbine on the top. And that turbine, once that spark jumps across that top, guess what? Whatever frequency it was before it jumped that spark gap, it's now a completely different frequency as it jumps that spark gap because of the distance. You see what I'm saying?
Yep, I get it, man. Yep.
So you're taking the same energy, recycling it. You're taking that energy, shooting it across over there, and then you're picking it up on the other side and dumping it back into the bucket.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Yep, I get it now. Yeah.
So imagine if you had 10,000 separate frequencies coming from 10,000 separate directions, and you could capture a volt off of each single one of them. All right, and then you take that bolt and you send that bolt into a capacitor bank. When that bolt charges that capacitor bank up to its potential, it will jump across the gap and create another pulse that will in turn be stored into another bank. So now you got 10,000 volts coming from 10,000 different directions being funneled into a centralized power unit that you in turn bleed over into your battery bank, and then you use that power. So it doesn't matter whether it's coming from the sun, it doesn't matter whether it's coming from the wind or the ground or static electricity. Everybody's rubbed their feet on the carpet and shocked their brother or their sister on the ear before.
Hey, listen, I got a good question for you. We moved up to the country, I was telling Muddy about this, and we started, I got up my plumbing career, and we moved up to the country, and my wife was in the balloon and party industry, and we started our own balloon and party supplies shop. Anyway, she builds these four different departments, yeah, that sell electronic goods and that. We build balloons, we build archways out of balloons. Anyway, we fill these things up with air, we put them into big plastic bags, and then we take them to the job, and then she starts twisting them together and putting them on a piece of conduit that's bent like a big arch to create the good effect in the front window. Well, every time I handed her the two balloons, I don't know how many volts were going through my fingers. I tell you what, her hair was standing up on end, and my hair was standing up on end, and I said, that's it, next time we do this, I'm grabbing a bunch of capacitors.
There you go. Hey, have you ever reached over to kiss her and a lightning bolt goes from your lip to hers?
Oh, that only happened before she put the ring on my finger.
Oh, well, if you get static charge buildup, it happens over at my house a lot. You know, it has to do with temperature.
I bet it does.
Yeah, but when that happens, I always tell her, when she gets shocked, because I said, I got electric personality, baby. Hey, But there you go, man. That there are thousands of volts that are in static discharges. And the static discharge is amazing because just like the Venturi effect that you will get from a Y pipe, if you pump water through a Venturi, the Y pipe, as you're pumping the water through, it's creating a suction on that open end of the pipe that you could then turn around and use that to pump more water out the deal. Just by the pressure that you're using from the first, will pull pressure from the other side. The same thing happens with a static discharge, and you can try this out for yourself. Get you a either a Wimshurst machine or a Van de Graaff generator, and have a wire jumping across to a spark gap, and you could actually put your hand down by there, the back, if you got hair on the back of your hand, and you can put it in just in the general vicinity, not where you're going to get shocked or anything, but you will literally feel an ion wind right before that static builds up to and jumps across there. So there is actually a Venturi effect that is occurring, pulling energy in from the atmosphere as it's getting ready to discharge, because what's going on here is the energy has to ionize the air in order to be able to have a path across to the other side. Otherwise, if there was no atmosphere in between there, that energy couldn't jump across the other side. It needs some sort of conduit, some sort of atmosphere in between to be able to make that leap. So you will see an ionization as that static charge is building up on one side. It's a higher pressure than the opposite side, and so it wants to go, you know, in
least path of resistance.
There, yeah, there you go. And while that's occurring, it's ionizing all the energy around there, all the hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, and whatever else is in your atmosphere right there in the general vicinity. And you can literally feel an ion wind right before that thing discharges. So, knowing this, and knowing that static charges could be captured into a capacitor bank, and you don't even have to be a capacitor bank. Just try getting an aluminum block, setting it next to the Van de Graaff generator, let it charge up, shut the Van de Graaff generator off, walk away from it, come back a couple hours later, and stick your finger by that aluminum block. All right, the electrons in that are charged up to the extent that it's still going to shock the crud out of you. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there it is, man. We're not creating anything. We're just moving it from point A to point B. And nature will always balance itself out no matter what. And so if you can keep nature off balance just long enough in the general vicinity of where you want the energy to go, then nature will continually try to balance it out. And so you're getting work done in between. That's all we're doing with electric motor. You know, that when you create two magnetic fields, there's positives and negatives in the wire. All right, so when you create two magnetic fields, they will instantaneously, according to Lenz's law, they will create a second counterforce that's trying to balance itself out. All it's doing is trying to align the positives and negatives. That's it. And now that you know that it's going to try to align the positives and negatives, you can use that knowledge, such as instead of creating the back EMF, send that energy off into a different direction and don't allow it to create the back EMF. So take your high voltage from your generator, send it into a gas reactor or whatever you try to use. You can test this with just a diode by itself, but even the diode will allow at some point for the energy to overcome that diode and still make a return path. A diode isn't a perfect stopping to keep it from going. That's what a diode does. It only allows the electron flow in one direction. But after a certain point, it will overcome that diode and go there anyway. But if you take a diode and put it on the other in between your load and your generator, you'll notice that it takes longer before that back EMF starts to happen. Because
what about a stream of diodes?
Yeah, well, it would take longer for it to actually bring the back EMF in. At some point, the higher the voltage gets, the pressure is going to be high enough that it will overcome the diode. You see what I'm saying? But until that point, your motor is running more efficient than it was without the diode. Because the back EMF is created when that second when those electrons make the loop from your generator through your load back into the generator, and now it's creating an opposing force that is acting against the force that you're trying to use. You see what I'm saying? Mm. And so instead of allowing that to occur, if you take and put something such as a plasma argon gas filled deal like the old mercury arc rectifier back in the day, is late 1800s, early 1900s, they had a mercury arc rectifier that they used to change Tesla's high voltage AC into Edison's high voltage DC, because at that point Edison already had some things in works, like high voltage generators or electric motors that were running elevators and such. And you needed to be able to change this frequency to that frequency so that you could be able to use it. So what they did was they made the mercury arc rectifier, which essentially was a glass octopus that had anodes and cathodes, and they send the high voltage AC as a direct short right in through the mercury ball and the little mercury down, the pool of mercury down the bottom of the rectifier, and it basically caused a dead short, which heated up that mercury to the point where it vaporized it, and then the high voltage AC keeps coming in and takes that mercury vapor and then energizes it into the plasma state, which in turn builds up heat and pressure and only allows electron flow in one direction. So essentially it was the first diode. But the key to the whole deal is that energy was not able to go back into the generator. You see what I'm saying?
Mm. I got a diode tube in the back of my Heathkits. It's pretty cool looking. It glows a pretty cool blue.
Well, essentially you've got a mercury arc rectifier with probably got argon in the one that you got, but it's the same concept. And if you put one of those between your load, if you can get that to the plasma state, if there's enough high voltage coming out of your generator, get that to the plasma state. The longer you run that, the brighter that's going to get, and at some point, it's actually probably going to burn a hole in the glass because they're not made for that type of temperature. But if you can maintain the temperature in that tube and the voltage coming out of that deal, there is absolutely no potential back EMF that can occur back into that generator. And then you take that energy that you just changed the frequency of, it's still the same energy, because remember, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. We haven't lost anything. It's the same amount of energy. It's just in a different state of matter than it was before you sent it out the generator. Then you take and you drain your, you connect your load to the opposite side and begin changing the steps of changing that energy back into a form that your motor on the opposite side can recognize. You guys see what I'm saying?
Right.
So you haven't defied Lenz's law. You just never gave it the opportunity to come and play.
I sent you a link earlier on a guy by the name of Paul Babcock. He did a presentation on how he managed to defeat Lenz's law. I've actually bought quite a few of the DVDs of all this information, but I haven't got that one as yet. Because they're selling the information to try and raise not only awareness, but to get money so that they can keep building some of these things.
Well, I can guarantee you that if you study that information good enough, you're going to find one of two things. First off, you're going to find out that they have got to figured out how to not allow the electron flow to go back into the generator. And that would be one of them. The other one would be that they have figured out a way to overcome Lenz's law by centrifugal force or any other means that will bring that generator, the load off of that generator to be able to overcome the back EMF. You see what I'm saying? It's like the cogging effect on two magnets, like on a magnet motor. The problem they have is that at certain point the rotation will slow down because of that cogging effect. But if you put a flywheel on the other side of that and you can get that flywheel up to speed, the weight and mass of that flywheel and the RPMs will keep that thing going long after you shut the power off. and it will overcome that clogging effect for a long time after. You can see that with a squirrel cage fan. When you fire that thing up and then shut it down, it doesn't stop instantly. It keeps rolling. You see what I'm saying?
Well, Jeff Harmon from Missouri Wind and Solar brought out that Freedom 2 wind turbine that had a skewed stator to stop the cogging effect. That's the turbine that I've got up here.
Well, if you could figure out a way, I've been thinking about this over and over, about the way that these things are wound up. If you visualize a super or a figure eight, like an eight pattern, you know, like the race car track, and you got you follow your electron flow. You know your electron flow is going this way, all right? and so if you put your load on and try to figure out which direction your electron flow is going the other way, is it going the wrong direction, such as, you know, you change the polarity on there. And if you can get your electron flow to actually go through the figure eight, through your load, and then back through the same direction, you see what I'm saying? No back EMF, because the electrons all flowing in the same exact direction.
You know, I think there's a couple of videos out showing something similar to that. I haven't got the video handy at the moment, but that was done by, I think, a guy by the name of Jim Murray. There's one up there I've got on the chat, the Dynaflux Concept and Lenz's Law by Jim Murray. There's actually a video on that page, I think, of him showing a presentation of a design that he came up with. It was quite ingenious, the thing that he used to do that.
And another thing is also the bifiller coils that they wind them, they triple wind them, and they change the deal. You know, if you think about how Lenz's law and Faraday's law all work in conjunction with one another, you can literally, because right outside that magnetic field, especially right outside the copper wire, is a magnetic field, basically waste energy that we get because we use our electricity as inefficient as possible. If you have other copper wires in the general vicinity and those lines of flux are crossing path with each other, then you're going to generate electricity in the second winding. And they've used this concept in hard drive motors and the X13. I'm positive they're using the same concept in there, to where that motor is literally assisting itself. You see what I'm saying? When you generate a magnetic field around the deal and you're actually creating the energy coming out, you can pump some of that energy back into the doggone system to literally help to assist, electrically assist an electrical motor. I know it sounds crazy and I get cussed out every time I talk about it, but it's common sense, man. You can change the direction of the stream of water to some extent. So why can't you change the direction of the electrical field? It's all
what Ryan did with that. What Ryan did with that jewel thief circuit lighting those 61 LEDs was amazing. I was just trying to think of a way that why couldn't we combine a lot of these things together, like earth batteries with jewel thief circuits and stuff like that, and keep amplifying the power up. I mean, surely you could do that with, you know.
That's what I've junk. Been saying all along. You take all the junk waste energy out there, and you take that, you store it in. It doesn't matter if it takes a month for this capacitor to charge up. An 800 microfarad capacitor will blow your thumb right off your hand. All right? So if it takes you a month to charge that up, and you got enough that one's going to be charged up every single day, at the end of 1 month, by the time the energy finally catches up to you, where that entire bank is charged up, you see what I'm saying? It's kind of like putting pennies in a jar. You're not going to get nothing right out of the gate, because it's going to take a long time for the first one to charge. But once that entire system's charged up, if you got an Olympic-sized swimming pool feeding a smaller swimming pool, which is feeding a smaller swimming pool all the way down to the bucket, I did this in my video 9 volts, and I also did it in one of the latest videos. I can't remember what the name of that doggone thing was. Anyway, when you take and build a system to where you got a large capacity storage, and you start draining that down into a smaller capacitor, into a smaller capacitor, and each and every one of these have their own independent unit, their own independent system. They're producing their own frequencies as they're running. So that energy is being picked up and pumped back into the system as well. But it's a step by step. When that Olympic swimming pool, as long as that Olympic swimming pool is full, all the rest of the systems underneath it, all the smaller systems will still function. When the Olympic swimming pool finally gets empty, those ones below there will shut down, determined by the size. All right, the next one in line, the next biggest one in line will be the next one to go. When it finally drains down, the next one in line, so on and so forth. You can literally time out pulses of light via blinking LEDs and capacitors. You can try it out, get you different size capacitors and make a circuit that's all the same circuit. You charge these capacitors up and you can watch as these things will time themselves out and shut down according to the size of that storage unit. Does that make sense to you?
There you go, buddy.
Huh?
I said, there you go, buddy.
Well,
yeah. You sit there and you charge. That thing can go for quite a while, and then you show which capacitors are actually still charged.
Yeah, and the key is this. If you continuously keep putting stuff into that Olympic-sized swimming pool, and that Olympic-sized swimming pool never falls below 50% of its capacity, all those other units will continue to run until you do that. So if you're throwing solar in there, if you're throwing wind in there, if you're throwing hydroelectrics or thermoelectrics or earth batteries or junk radio frequencies, whatever energy that you're throwing in there will keep that pool filled up. And there is enough things going on in nature and man-made that right now that has more than enough energy to keep that pool full. What do you think?
Sounds kind of like when we were talking about, I was fixing to bring up before Raymond left, we were sitting there talking about his...
Oh, we lose Raymond?
Yeah. He just disappeared.
Oh, maybe he had something to do.
Yeah, somebody came in the office. But we were talking about taking that dual escapement he's got, that 650-pound, 12-foot pendulum, and... we were going to start boosting the water up to an upper tank there, and then instead of trying to use a chain, because the power comes all at once and surges with that pendulum.
Well, to help you out, Marty.
We got a problem of it almost break the chain, and it would turn the generator for just like a half a turn, and then do it again and again. We were thinking about just pumping the water straight up.
Well, to help you out,
bring it down, run it through a turbine.
To help you out on what you're talking about right there, think about that Olympic-sized swimming pool that I was telling about. If you take, and let's say you know how much water it actually takes to finally get this reaction as it's falling to turn the deal, right? And you know how long it takes you to fill that tank. If it takes the point where you put two tanks up there, and then you got a solar panel, which is completely independent to the entire system that you're trying to run, and it's continuously all day long pumping water up into that deal. And you know that this water, if at this level, will run for 8 hours solid until it's finally empty, and you got to repump it up there. So if you get ahead of the game with your solar panel pumping water into the first tank, which in turn will feed into the second tank, when that thing starts to lower down, it'll push a valve that will basically fill itself back up. You're ahead of the game. That's the same thing to do with solar all the time. Yeah, it's why the whole big giant battery bank's all in play. You know, you got the giant battery bank to buy you time until the sun comes up again. Same concept. So, why can't you do it? That's the question. Why won't you do it?
I got the huge battery bank.
Oh, there you go. You got
to
start.
You got a nice battery.
You got the perfect start. Now just start filling it in with everything that you can get your hands on. You know,
Larry Wind and Solar would be jealous.
And so all you got to do is figure out how much time that entire battery bank will last whenever the sun goes down. And if the sun goes down and you still got wind blowing, well, then you don't even have to factor that in anymore. And then if you decide you want to throw some extra in there, some hydroelectric, some thermoelectric, some radiant energy, such as Tesla's radiant energy patent, where you're picking up radio waves right out of the dang air, or if you want to go even farther and put a couple 200-foot towers up out there that you can pull static electricity out of the atmosphere.
I think the airfield might sort of have something to say about that next door.
You need to get one of them Tesla chargers that Stewie's got. You need to get a Tesla charger. He gets these batteries and they say that, what do you want them? You can't revive them. You can't fix them. There ain't nothing you can do to them. And he says, oh, yes. So he keeps bringing them home and they keep giving them to him. And he fixes them up and he's got several battery banks. And it all works.
Every battery out there, including ones that have, like, let's say you got a battery that has one or two or maybe three dead cells in it, that battery still has storage potential. And if you condition that battery, you can get that battery to come back to life. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, he's got a Tesla charger that does that. I mean, it desulfates it and brings it back to life.
Man, that's what my oil burner igniter does. You see the seen in my videos?
Those Tesla chargers are designed on John Bedini's SG motor that he built back in the 80s. And the story with that one was that he was building these things on a small scale until he got a knock on the door one day. They beat him up and said, you're not to do this. You'll be buying gas, till the day you die. So he sort of went quiet for quite a while. And was building, toy models of this sort of thing, still proving that it worked, but not telling anybody about it until he had this girl next door who was doing a science fair project thing coming up, and she asked for his help. So he, and the reason it's called the SG, it's because the SG stands for schoolgirl. So she built this motor using a series of magnets and a wheel and a coil with a whole series of windings on the coil, transistors, diodes and stuff. And he was able to she built the whole thing herself. It cost her peanuts to make. And this thing, she won the science fair with it because this thing ran on a little 9-volt battery, and it ran for a week, and it lit up an LED. And all the science teachers said there's something wrong, this shouldn't be happening. And that was the only way that his invention was able to come to fruition, because it was published when she won the fair. And so that's what, and this design he uses, he's got on the website there, the Bedini SG thing that I think is on there. Oh, that's johnbedini.net. He'll show you how to build one using a 26-inch pushbike wheel and I think 24 ferrite magnets, all facing north. He gets a 130 feet of, just off the top of my head, I think it's 24-gauge magnet wire. I think there's like seven of those and one 26-gauge wire, all 130 feet long. He twists them all together, wraps it around the coil, and then gets a whole series of these very thin iron rods, like the thickness of a spoke of a bike wheel, and he rams them down the centre as to the core, and you can actually charge a much larger battery off a very small battery using this design. And it will do work, and it will light LEDs, as well. But that's what the Tesla chargers are designed on.
Yeah, and that Beckett oil burner igniter that I've got, I had a battery that I keep talking about that whenever I first got it would only show 11 volts. It was had a dead cell in it, so it wasn't even enough to start a doggone bus anymore, so I got this battery. And so I started using it for my experiments because I could put enough energy into it to get to run that doggone oil burner igniter. I just noticed that after the longer I use this doggone thing, and I found out by accident one time that because the Beckett oil burner igniter is a midpoint ground, which essentially means it doesn't have a ground, that the energy was going from, it was making a continuous loop back into the battery. I reached over there to grab one of the terminals on there to try to tighten it up a little bit, and I got the living crud shocked out of myself. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then
did
I realized.
Did any of the cells get hot?
Huh?
Did any of the cells get hot?
Nope, not a single one of them got hot. All it did was the high voltage was basically working right alongside the other frequency that would be the 12 volt energy, that DC current that's going in the into the igniter, and it was literally basically desulfating the battery while I was using it. You just don't want to touch the terminals while it's on. If you look closely in my videos, you'll see that I got an ink pen that I use as to keep me from getting shocked. It's just a little plastic pen insulator.
It's shocked several times a day.
Yeah, but the longer I ran that doggone thing, it finally got up there where it was over 13 volts of electricity in that battery, and the battery basically repaired itself. You know?
Wouldn't the sulfation be buried as you're charging it, and you'd have to decharge the battery to expose the sulfate and then recharge it again so that it mixes back in with the solution?
Well, the only problem I ever had is whenever I left it alone. I hadn't used it for quite a long time. Then it went back to its normal state, which it right now won't hold 11 volts because I haven't used it in months. But all I got to do is get out there and start using it again, and it'll go right back up to where it was before.
And how long does it stay there?
It stayed there as long as I was using it.
I bought the information on battery secrets and saltless secrets and all that sort of stuff from Tesla Chargers because I wanted to learn about it. And Peter Lindemann gives a lecture on battery secrets, and he explains to you, how to, using their chargers, or how to use this technology, on how to revive these batteries and what's the best batteries to try and revive. But he said if the batteries don't get up to 15.2 volts, they never actually remove all the sulfation in the plates, and when you're decharging the battery again, the sulfation gets covered. I mean, look, I could be wrong with the description of this, but that sulfation that's in the plates, in those little pits and little holes, gets stuck there, gets covered over again, and then you charge it again and use it again, and they never come out. So he said with the technology that they're using, if you charge the battery and the little green light should come on, and I see the little green light come on and it doesn't get up to 15.2 volts, which they're talking about, because they actually show it on a graph where it's got to go above 15 volts to, as he calls it, point P, and then it drops back down again, and once it's dropped back down again, the charge is actually finished. But if it doesn't get up to that voltage correctly, then you know that the sulfation's still in the plates, so you then have to decharge it. And he explains how you go down to 11 volts, and then you decharge it down to 11 volts, and then you charge it back up again, and then you test it again, and then you might have to decharge it down to 10.5 volts, and then charge it back up again. And now I've been doing that with these old batteries, and even with their smallest, and I probably shouldn't be doing it because I only just recently got their 20 amp, and these are all solar chargers too, by the way, running on amorphous solar panels, the low light panels. Even with their small 3 amp charger, I've been using that on 100 amp hour batteries and bringing them back to life again.
Well, I believe it, and what they do over here with a lot of these batteries, when they recondition them, they will literally drain them out, flush them out, and put new electrolyte in them, and basically charge them with a battery conditioner, and they turn around and resell them. That's why when you go to buy a battery over here, you have a cord charge. You have to bring your old battery in to replace the battery that you just bought, or you have to pay the full price for the battery. So,
did you say that they're putting a product in the solution?
They drain the batteries completely dry. They flush them out, and then they put new electrolyte in them.
Yeah.
And then they charge them with a battery conditioner, and basically when it's all said and done, they got a brand new battery off of your junk battery. Well, here's something that's controversial that I'm sure I'll get cussed out for. You know how a capacitor works, right?
Yep.
Well, every single one of those batteries out there in that gizmo on the Free Thinker series are bad batteries. Every single one of them are bad batteries. One of them literally is bone dry.
All it's right. Got a crack in it. That's the one that you've got the earth going into the ground. Yeah.
Well, and so how could a person store energy in a battery that's bone dry? What kind of concept could you think that a battery could literally store energy even if it had no electrolyte in it?
Well, it's you're using it as a capacitor.
Aha! You're the first one that said it.
Already a plumber, what would I know?
You're the first one that said it. I've been trying to show these people how I've been waiting for somebody. You need to go over to that video and you need to put that comment in the section. That's you're the first one that said it. A capacitor is nothing more than two plates. And normally you have some sort of dielectric in the center, which could be plastic, it could be glass or whatever, but guess what, folks? You can also have atmosphere as your dielectric.
Yep.
So, I got dead batteries that are holding...
Learn something.
Huh?
I said, that's good, I did learn something.
Yeah, you did. Man, we got to give him an honorary diploma for the mad science, because he hit it right on the head. So you got a doggone capacitor and a dead battery, and it still has potential to store energy. And so if you're using negative ions, if you're using static energy, you can still use that energy as a load. You can try it. Charge a capacitor up, put an LED to it, and you can sit there and watch while that LED runs like a flashlight. They do it to shake up flashlights all the time.
Especially if you got a limiting resistor in there.
Yep. And so I've been sitting here trying to show people forever and a day, and finally, the first person comes on here from Australia and says, hey, there's a capacitor.
Hey, well, that's Muddy's fault, because I've actually been telling him that he's the one that kicked this off some years ago when I caught onto one of his videos one day, and I've been hooked on his videos ever since. And I thanked him very much, because if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have found half of you guys and been so interested in this. But, you know, when I looked at that thing that you were building outside, I mean, a lot of it didn't make sense to me, because I thought you were building something even more wild than what it really was. And when I looked at the way that you made comment about that dead battery at the base of the tower with the crack in it, and you had the negative pole going into the ground, I went, you're using that like a capacitor. You've got an ionizer up the top. Not that I really understood what an ionizer was doing. You know, I'm looking at all this stuff, and you had spark gaps across your exhaust turbine thing that you normally put on a roof. And I'm thinking, wow, there's something really amazing going on here.
Let's talk about the negative ion generator for a second, since you brought that up. Now, what happens when you have a negative ion generator? What's happening in the area where those negative ions are coming off?
Isn't it a collector?
Yeah, it's interacting with static electricity.
Mm.
So now you get a static charge built up to where you can literally stick your cattle prod up to the top and put your finger on there and get the crud shocked out of you, because it's storing it like a capacitor on the top load up there, which is that wind turbine portion that you see.
Yep, and then it jumps across the spark gap.
Yeah. So essentially what I've been showing everybody is so incredibly simple that it's almost stupid. I mean, come on, you're throwing batteries away that still have a potential to store a massive amount of energy. Now, it may not be the energy that you're thinking as far as the way you normally run a chemical battery, but what it is still storage capacity. You can still run stuff off of that energy. And so, essentially, that thing has been sitting out there since the second video lit up and still lit up, and it never goes dead because either the sun's out or the wind's blowing or there's energy coming from the dirt.
Right. Which is capacitive.
Now, for the folks out there who are listening in who are familiar with the Free Thinkers series, we got our first winner on this deal, man. First one that said it. That's brilliant, man. I love it. Well, guys,
I'm going to celebrate with a Jack Daniels now.
Cool. If I was there, I'd join you.
In a can. They get them in a can.
Anyway, we're down to the wire, so, you know, look, it's been a brilliant show, and I hope that you come back and join us again on the Knights of the Round Table. We got a lot of exciting things going on, and we have every single answer to every single question on how to build literally the perfect generator that will solve all the so-called carbon emissions, footprint, whatever, you know, all that kind of stuff, oil crisis. You know, we have no energy crisis. What we have is a common sense crisis. And when we can get people past that point, we got it made. So with that said, you guys got anything last you want to say? Do we still have Steve in here? He'd be awful quiet.
Sometimes it's the time to listen rather than talk.
That's when you're getting smart.
All right, yeah, so we learned a lot today from each other. What about you?
It's not like you put out all this knowledge and you lose it. No, you keep it. You just strengthen it. But if you're only putting out, then you're not growing.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Well, Stuart, do you got a YouTube channel?
I don't post anything. I don't do any uploads. I favorite a lot of stuff, and most of it's all to do with, you know, energy and things like that. So there's quite a lot of stuff on there.
Well, drop me a link to your YouTube channel, and I'll subscribe to you just in case someday you get the urge to show somebody a discovery that you found.
And he's got He's got plenty of stuff. He's got a big old wind turbine on a crank up tower that tilts up and everything, and how he has set it up. He's got them battery banks. He's got the Tesla charger, and he's got LED lights that are remote controlled down at the party shop. What's the name of that town you're in there?
Yarrawonga in Victoria.
All right, so essentially what you're telling me is he has a vast amount of time research going on there with links of videos that he's liked, and so if you're interested in alternative energy, go over and see what he's been watching and you'll learn something. So with that said, folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. It's been a wonderful show. Thanks to all the honorable knights on the table there. And if you want to be a knight of the round table, it's as simple as a Skype phone call in. We just ask that everybody be respectful to one another, and if you want to just be an honorary knight, don't want to call in, jump over there in the chat rooms at Wake Radio or Shaziz Radio or any of the other radio networks out there, people-to-people radio, and just get in there and talk to people, learn stuff, find out that you don't have to throw away your car batteries because you can still use them to charge stuff with, and you can actually recondition them, that kind of stuff. Either way, instead of wasting, let's get out there and fix some stuff. What do you guys think?
What's the next project?
Right now, I'm working on that X13. I'm putting a flywheel system on that thing. And plus, I got to revisit the project out there in the woods there. And I also got tons of irons in the fire, but all of it's going to be some fun and informative information that I put out there. The key to the whole deal is there. Think outside the box. If you're a free thinker, you're going to come across an answer just like Stuart did. All right?
I'm going to go to Shaziz's and I'm going to ride that Electron 2.
Yeah, and that's a blast. All right, well, everybody, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I got to send this on over to somebody else so they can get their information out. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Peace.
So, with that said, we'll play us up out of here with some constitutional peasants.
Man. Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Do you hear that? Do you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off so mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Fulfills the table, and the knights of the round table.